This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Happy Monday to you. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290 as the Winnipeg Jets embark on a three-game road trip beginning tonight in Dallas. And we do have Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey for you live at 7 o'clock with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call, and of course, we'll tee it all up for you throughout the day, including right here on The Big Show. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. The afternoon ride goes from 3 till 6:30, and 6:30 till 7:30 is the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Jets and Stars, 7:30 tonight, and then the Huron Windows postgame show beginning right after the final whistle. Lots to get to today, as there usually is on a Monday, and we're happy to do it for you. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. The Jets lose to the Montreal Canadiens at home on Saturday night before embarking on this three-game road trip. 5-4 in overtime. Lots of discussion around that game before we tee up tonight's battle. Win the Central Division with the Stars. The Blue Bombers beat the Stampeders on Friday. Is that a miracle?
You're damn right it is.
Is it? Is it the ugliest miracle you've ever seen?
No. There was a playoff game that I've referenced a number of times on the show four or five years ago in Calgary. Saskatchewan was in town. Calgary, huge favorites, 7 turnovers. Saskatchewan won the game. So there are three miracles that happen in this game, and what we need to figure out some sort of a name for it as my chair sinks down to the ground here, and I'm now in a deep squat reaching up to the mic.
I thought somebody in the earth was grabbing you as you spoke.
Bull Levi Mitchell doesn't play. They have foul weather, which is a great equalizer. And then, of course, the 7 turnovers dished up, and we watched. We were all in this room, myself, Darren Bombing, Chris Walby, and we just didn't believe our eyes, right? Okpalau go running with the touchdown. Like, everything that was transpiring was like, this isn't possible. It was just incredible.
And not only that, but somebody switched Jerome Essam's cleats for a pair of slippers. So, like, that there was another bit of
candy ass. That right there, that embodied, that's bad Jerome Essam. And you're slipping like that, boys. What do you do if you're slipping like that? You put on longer cleats. He's got the option to find, like, they've got an assortment of cleats, man. And you see him on the sideline trying to brush off his cleats. He was so uninspired. That was a pathetic display on his part.
As I said, lots to get to today. So the Bombers host the Edmonton Eskimos. We'll get into that as well. NFL Week 9, of course. We have our final grand prize winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas. As on this current Jets road trip,
Vegas! Get the charter ready. Brooksy called me on the weekend, setting up all the arrangements.
I will see you on Friday. I just don't know if it'll be in Vegas or not. But we'll find out this week. We also have your NHL news and notes. Massive trade in the National Hockey League. It's finally done, and I am stunned what Matt Duchene brought back to Colorado after all this time. We'll get into that. And, of course, as I said, our Hockey Nights in Vegas grand prize winner. We're going to tee up the phones as well in an hour of your phone calls at 9 o'clock on the Boss Pizza fan line. Ian Mendez from Ottawa on the trade, of course. Paul Edmonds live from Dallas, the voice of the Jets. Marshall Ferguson on everything that happened in the CFL. And Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey. As we said, it's Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Big sports weekend. How was the weekend, gentlemen?
Weekend was good. Went and saw the new Thor.
Oh, yeah.
Trey said it was the best movie he's ever seen in his life. It was damn good. Like, it's holy smackers. It's pretty dang good, guys. You got to go see it. And then had the young fella had his game yesterday morning, 8 in the morning. U9's out on the pitch yesterday and playing against a team. And one of the kids on the other team bit 2 of our kids.
What?
Yeah. They came off the field complaining they're getting bit.
Suarez?
Yeah, by halftime. That's what everybody was calling him. All the kids are calling him Suarez.
Suarez in Manitoba? What? Say it ain't so. Brandon, you turned 17, 18?
Yeah, 18. On the weekend? Yeah, I had my first beer. Yeah, it was awesome.
Nice.
Happy birthday. How was your birthday, man?
Didn't get bit or bite anyone, so that was
that's
good.
That's a shame.
Yeah, that's about the only thing
yeah,
that
at 18,
didn't
that's a shame.
Yeah, yeah. I was I was not up at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. Took a little.
we have diametrically opposed experiences on this planet. Yeah, don't we?
There might have been soccer on, but I don't think I was able to comprehend what was going on. But I took a little road trip down south and caught the GSP fight. And yeah,
what a classic, huh?
Yeah. Oh boy, I had a good time though. Yeah, good time. I survived thanks to daylight savings time.
When you say down south, are you talking St. Norbert or Grand Forks or what?
Grand Forks. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That's about the limit of my my travel budget
down
right
south-ness.
Now. Yeah.
Is it warmer down there, down south?
It was fantastic.
Outstanding stuff.
No biting, though.
No biting.
You can get that in Grand Forks, I'm told. If that's what you're looking for. On a road sport, Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey. I'm sure they don't like being associated with that, but they do love being associated with the Winnipeg Jets. And as we said, we'll delve into tonight's battle between the Jets and the Stars. Should be a great rematch from two games ago on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. But let's start with the weekend, gentlemen. The Winnipeg Jets were absolutely owned against the Montreal Canadiens. They managed to have a 4-2 lead in the third period. They give it up, and they end up losing 5-4 in overtime. Lots of details to talk about in this game, but that's where we'll start. I'm not sure they deserved a point, but as I tweeted out after the game, as William Money said in Unforgiven, the classic Clint Eastwood character, deserves got nothing to do with it. They managed to get a point, in my mind, out of a game that they really didn't deserve one.
And I've got to admit, I saw everybody talking about it, was watching it all, but I was shocked when I saw the shots directed towards the net being as outrageous as it was. It didn't seem to me that it was basically 2-1 or more sort of thing, right? Like, I thought it was a very entertaining game. The flow of it was fantastic. The neutral zone seemed to be just dynamic and flowing through back and forth. And when it came up that the stat, like 78-38 in the third period, shots directed towards the net, I was just dumbfounded by that. Now, having said that, the last 5 minutes, you're just not going to see a team hanging on more than the Jets in those last 5 minutes. Holy smackers. And then the disappointing finish to it, and maybe the discussion we can have on the game-winning goal ultimately in overtime and such. But a very entertaining game. And the one the boys, I just didn't think it was as lopsided as it was as I was watching it. And certainly they're in a position to win it.
I thought it was very lopsided.
Yeah. I would probably be in between you two guys on this. It was. I don't think it was complete domination. Yeah. Shut it. I don't think it was complete domination.
No biting.
But I don't think it was. I don't think it was, you know, kind of an evenly played contest either. I thought Montreal took it to the Jets pretty good. I thought, as usual, it's funny. All the Montreal Jet games seem to have similar paths as they go along, and the common theme is usually the Canadiens' quickness gives the Jets major fits, and they have yet to find out an answer for that. And it's probably good that they're in separate divisions and separate conferences, because Montreal would probably be racking up a pretty solid record playing the Jets 5 or 6 times a season. I thought Hellebuck was good. There was maybe one or two he would like back, although the one really soft one that looked soft, a tough break with Bufflin's stick clamping down in his glove right as he goes out there to make the save. But, I mean, your tender makes 45 saves. Generally, that should be enough to help you out, right? Yeah. So I think if you're the Jets, you'd look at that game and say, yeah, we're real fortunate. We're real fortunate to get out of that one, you know, with at least a single point there.
And with the run that they've been on, it's okay, right? You have a little bit of a blip, like a little bit of
one. If you get a point, get a point out of something like that in the run you're on and you stumble a bit and still manage to get a point. Mm-hmm. Now, because of the 4-2 lead, there's a lot of people that will say they should have had two. And I get that. Like, that's the way I guess we're going to question this game right now. Is it a point gain or a point loss for the 4-2 lead? The way Montreal, whether it's the statistical aspects of the game, the analytics of it, or whether it's what you saw, they went up 4-2, and I thought, this could be a very, very good team if they pull this out, because I just didn't feel they were hemmed in their own end. They didn't have the puck anywhere near enough, and they were up 4-2, and then they still managed to get a point out of it, but they blew the 4-2 lead. I think it's a different story if they don't get a point out of that, if they lose 5-4 in regulation. But I do think at this point for a team that's, you know, taking next steps before our eyes and needs to this season, I think that's a point gain more than a point loss because they just were outplayed in my mind.
Yeah, if that's a hiccup, I mean, if that's, you know, those, if that's going to be the game that you have and it's sort of a relaxy sort of a game, now I think the emotional levels are going to be too geeked up for that to occur tonight with Dallas. Things look poised here for this to be a beauty. And then, of course, you got Vegas, Arizona. And that's where, like, don't be bad Jets of years past in those three games there where, you know, you crap the bed. I wonder what people think. Do you have to win all three of those games? 5 points, okay, with 4 points. 4 points might be disappointing in that three-game span. But hopefully it's not what we saw Saturday. It's not some sort of precursor for what's about to come, and now they're going to, you know, crap the bed or sort of hit the skids here for a little bit. Just have an off game like that from a strategic or just a solidified type of a place where you didn't control things as much as you'd like and get right back on track tonight. So long as it's a one-time deal and you pull out of it and then you put 4, 5, 6, 7 more games together, that's totally okay with me.
Yeah, because it's also coming off what I think is their best game of the season against Dallas on Thursday night. So if you can go back into Dallas and compete and play hard and not have any sort of a letback, then yeah, I think you can kind of push Saturday's loss aside. And
prior to that, you had 4 or 5 pretty strong games, right?
Yeah, not perfect, but solid outings. And you know what? Like, if the Jets can grab a win tonight and then they have some easy matchups later on in the week, I mean, first in the Central isn't that far out of the equation. Like, it's crazy, but they're 6 points back with 2 games in hand. So all of a sudden, you can close that gap pretty quickly and then maybe, more importantly, get past that logjam for, what is it, 3rd through 6th here, where 4 teams are just a point back of you.
They have 17 points in 13 games. They're 2nd in the Central Division right now and a point ahead of Dallas. That's why tonight is a key matchup going forward. But 17 points in 13 games, 7-3-3, and a +3 goal differential, I think, is you know, that's where they – you couldn't ask for much better right now at this point of the season. But going into tonight, it's a key battle. I think that, you know, it's going to be hotly contested. I think this is going to be a big Central Division battle throughout for seasons to come. But if they can get a point out of this, if they can win this game, they then go to Vegas. Vegas is a wild card to me. I think they're better, obviously, than I gave them credit for to start this season. What to expect, especially with them being on home ice and the Jets' first game there. And then, you know, you have Arizona. And I think Arizona you have to get 2 points out of. So if you go on the road and get 4 of 6 points, to me, that's a success. If you get 5 or more, I think that's pretty good. That's a pretty good week coming back home for 3 straight.
Yeah, I hesitate to say that. And you're referencing specifically Vegas and Arizona twice, right?
Yeah, I think you get a win in Arizona. You got to get a point out of Vegas. You got to get a point out of tonight. Now, if you win tonight and you win in Arizona and get a point, or you get a point tonight and you beat both Vegas and Arizona.
So you're talking this week. You're not including the game on Tuesday against Arizona. Yeah, I guess 4 or 5, maybe. I would consider 4 to be acceptable.
Yeah.
I would consider 5 to be a success. You go get 5, and that's a success. 4 is the bare minimum, basically, what you got to do here this week.
I just got a tweet. Got to get 6 points in next 4 games, or it's firing time.
Are you serious?
Like 7-3-3, well, second in the Central Division.
You get folks that are a little bit more out there than us.
I like them. That's I like all of you.
That is
thanks.
Crazy.
Keep
talk.
Tweeting, but yeah,
I say it's just roll. Like, come on, dude. That's crazy. Right, there's the crazy.
We'll get into that,
tweet
and we'll get into the game more too. Because like I heard, what is Bufflin doing on OT for the second game after the Columbus? I looked it up. I Garrett Hole put out the numbers after the Columbus game. He's very good numbers wise.
Well, he's good when he's not gassed, and he was
he was gassed, and that's what it is, and that's what somebody said. He goes, he was lagging again, or lazy, and he wasn't lazy. He was caught flat-footed because of his own turnover, and then he was gassed on top of it.
Well, but there's the lazy works into being gassed, right? Like, he gets knocked on his ass by Pacioretty. You're really gassed, right, if that happens. And then for him to make the decision to float towards the corner instead of going to the front of the net is an impossible thing to wrap your mind around. I went and got Trey, and we watched it 20 times. I don't just – the lack of – what's going on in your brain to drift toward, like, hoping that Toby can flip it back to you as you got two guys in front of the net. I just don't understand that.
We're going to talk about that next and his reaction, because I was at the game and there was some stuff going on that I was watching intently to see if he was going to get misconduct or anything else. And we'll also get into more of the Stars battle. The Blue Bombers host the Edmonton Eskimos after beating the Stamps. Lots on that. NFL Week 9, GSP, lots to get to before this hour is up on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, as we are pleased to bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey tonight at 7 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day tonight on TSN 1290 as Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns will bring you the call for Road Sport Auto Credit Hockey as the Jets are in Texas to take on the Dallas Stars, a key Central Division battle. We'll touch a little bit more on this Montreal Canadiens 5-4 overtime loss for the Jets right now and get your calls on the game and what you saw during it on the Boss Pizza fan line this morning at 9. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. So Dustin Byfuglien, in my mind, was clearly interfered with by Pacioretty. He gets up, gets the puck back, and goes up the wall. I see Andrew Copp bailing the zone, which if he could have hit him with a pass, I think would have been a clear breakaway. But Byfuglien, probably in his mind, doing the right thing to play it up the boards, turns the puck over, and then he's caught. He can't get back, he's flat-footed, and Pacioretty ends up scoring. Byfuglien turns as the ref is going behind the net and slams his stick over the net, much real close to where the official was, starts giving him an earful, skates towards him, gives him more of an earful about the lack of an interference call. As they're skating away back to the center ice and then they go to their room, he goes to the bench, continues to wave them off the ice with his hand, and then takes a water bottle, and I don't want to say shoots it at the refs, but shoots it in their direction, and it ends up hitting their own net as they're leaving the ice by the gate by the net. Just incensed over the lack of a call there. And I tweeted out that Tyler Myers' cross-check was a cross-check. It was a clear cross-check. Mm-hmm. But the officiating both ways again was horrific. And even on Montreal, there were some missed calls that the Canadians should have got. But I was keeping a close eye on the Byfuglien thing because, again, in the general direction a water bottle goes towards the officiating, the stick slam and then getting in a ref's face post-game about that call. Your thoughts on the final play in overtime?
Well, you don't need to soften it up by saying, in your mind, it was interference, clear as day, doesn't touch the puck, puck's gone, he gets hit. And how you miss that is, it's terribly unfortunate. But what followed in Byfuglien's actions was even worse to me. You know, like the ref makes a horrible mistake, play should have been, have another situation on the ice, play's dead, and Byfuglien's able to escape the ice and go back to the bench. But when you're that tired, and I just the thing I don't understand, and Buff is fairly limited, I find, 3-on-3, and he's already done right at the end of three periods. A big guy, it's difficult to move, get that body moving around for 25-ish minutes a night, and there's not much he has to offer as far as staying on the ice for extended periods of time, 3-on-3, and it turns into a real dangerous situation when he gets caught out there. And this isn't the first time we've seen him caught out there this year in 3-on-3 situations. So it was just a real bad situation, but it's up to Dustin Byfuglien and Paul Maurice and everyone involved here managing the 3-on-3 time that Buff can't be out there when he's that tired and that done. Obvious blatant miss by the refs. But ultimately that goal in a big way still falls on Bufflin's shoulders. The not getting it cleared is one thing, but what he does, the decision-making process after that is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to argue there was a no penalty call on the play. It's horrific that an official 2 feet away from the play can look at that and not make a call on the play, and then it's just a cacophony of errors after that. And Byfuglien makes a couple of them for sure, but Toby Enstrom can clear the puck out, and you know none of this is even really talked about other than the missed interference call, but he tries to get cute with it, fakes the slap shot, and gets the puck poked off his stick, and then you have a guy wide open in front of the net. So it was just terrible all around. That whole 5 second sequence there,
right? Yeah.
was just awful, just horrible. And it's too bad, right? It's too bad. You would have liked to have seen if the Jets could have got the puck out there, cleared it out, what could have happened afterwards. But especially because you thought the Jets might have been due for a power play at that point. But for anybody out there saying that the Myers call was horse crap against them, I mean, could you get a more textbook example of how to cross-check somebody from behind into the boards?
Like, you got to take it easy on the Kool-Aid, the Jets Kool-Aid, if you're making that sort of a statement, man, if you're upset about that call.
And that's how – look, Dustin Bufflin turned the puck over. There's no doubt about that. He wasn't at his best in Columbus in overtime as well. But there are other players that I know Bufflin's a lightning rod, but Laine in Columbus made a bad play that led before Bufflin's. The same here. I thought the same about Enstrom. It's 3-on-3, and it's the officiating overall in that game, both ways, was, again, I thought the one earlier in the week I thought was atrocious, and this one was as well in my mind. Not to keep harping on the officials, but I think, and when I say that, I always try to include both teams. I don't like to do it if there's just bad calls against one team. I thought it just was poorly officiated overall. We'll move on, and we'll get our thoughts on the Stars as well, as it is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars at 7, but we will delve into the Winnipeg Blue Bombers going into Calgary, beating the Stampeders, and earning a home playoff date versus the Eskimos. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets Hockey on TSN 1290 tonight at 7 as the Winnipeg Jets embark on a three-game road trip. Tonight they're in Dallas to take on Central Division rival the Stars on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Full pre- and post-game coverage. Afternoon ride from 3 till 6:30. Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6:30 till 7:30 with Olszewski and friends. And then, of course, the Huron Windows post-game show will wrap it all up for you. There will be a home playoff date for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as the Bombers go into Calgary on a minus 15 night with the wind chill, lots of snow on the field, and pull out a 23-5 victory with Dan Lefevre at the helm. A grand total of 19 first downs in this game, 4 turnovers last I counted by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 2 for touchdowns, and they cruise to a 23-5 victory. They will now host the Edmonton Eskimos in the West semifinal this Sunday at Investors Group Field at 3:30 p.m. That's because the Eskimos beat the Saskatchewan Roughriders 28-13. We talked a little bit about the game itself, but let's delve into it, gentlemen. First and foremost, are you surprised with this victory?
Are you kidding me? They're 10-point dogs. They're going into a situation that looked... That was 10-point dogs with both teams not having their starting quarterback. And it played out. Like, there were certain things that had to happen. Miracles occurred for the Bombers to be able to go and secure that win. And that is when Matt Nichols is already out, a healthy Bo Levi Mitchell sits out as well. And then you have the weather that happens. And that it's well known that poor weather is an equalizing factor. That's the way it is. And then for Calgary to unfurl 7 turnovers, we were talking before the game that, you know, it was it possible the Bombers could win? Yeah, and the turnovers was the key, right? You win that turnover battle by 3-ish, 4-ish, you got a chance. And they end up winning by 3-4 the turnover battle, and just basically Calgary gift wrap, getting buried early in the game, and the boys played well enough to pull things together to go and capture it. A fantastic display by the defensive line, the best we've seen them play. There wasn't, you know, a whole lot of help necessary outside of that. There was Alexander with a nice pick early on, but Buckley did not ever really look comfortable. And same with the third-string quarterback, Stanzi, once he went in with throw an interception as well. So there just wasn't much out there offensively. The Bombers did what was necessary with the way things presented themselves, and you can't take anything away from them, but Calgary just sort of gave it up here, and it makes it to me a little bit ominous upcoming. Like, Calgary's in an interesting spot here, right? They've won 3 games in a row. They haven't looked good for the 3 weeks, really, and looked the very worst.
You mean lost those three games?
Yeah, they've lost three in a row. And it just they haven't looked good at all. So you wonder, now they get a bye week, and yeah, they're going to have Bo Levi Mitchell and everything to go, but they had him in the Bo Levi Mitchell and most everyone going in the first couple of games in those losses. So just where is Calgary right now? I think this is a great opportunity, be it Winnipeg or Edmonton, if one of those teams can play up really well upcoming here and sort of catapult their way towards Calgary with a real good showing in Winnipeg, whoever comes out of Winnipeg is going to have a hell of a chance, I think, to go and get an upset just because I think things are a little bit precarious or off right now with what's happening in Calgary. But just a massive tip of the hat, a shocking win for the Bombers. And it ends up, too, guys, the Bombers make about $3.5 million with that home playoff game. So what that does for the organization, right, and the way everything came together for them to secure that win, that is crazy.
I know about five guys I talked to on Saturday might make $2 million off alone at this game on Sunday. They are so, like, pumped for a home playoff date, the first one ever at Investors Group Field.
Oh, the importance of that cannot be understated. And like you said, Troy, the amount of things that needed to go right in that game, you couldn't have written up a better script for the Bombers to try and, even just the first half, right? Mm-hmm. And even then, you never totally felt comfortable. Like, there was, 20-0 at halftime?
Yeah, 23. And 23. It was because you saw 19 warming up on the sideline. I said at halftime during the Minute Bomber game day show that, hey, man, if Bo Levi Mitchell starts the third quarter, the Bombers need 10 more points to win this game. Right? It was just look like if he comes out, look out, and they got to hang on. But thankfully, he never came in.
Yeah, and you know what? The Bombers, I don't want to take away anything from their defensive performance because they were outstanding, but the quarterbacking play was just not up to the pro level. It was that simple. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny when Stanzi comes in, and I think it was Glenn Suter saying, "No, I kind of liked him on Iowa. I wonder if maybe this could be." And then he throws a pick across his body. He's like, "Oh, yeah. Okay, that's why he's the third string quarterback."
He had a great first pass, and I thought, and then I remember him. I remember him being drafted by Kansas City. Yeah. I remember him having some stops in the NFL, and I thought the same thing. And then the next possession,
it was like, "Oh yeah, that explains it."
It's amazing, isn't it? Astonishing. Like all the CFL quarterbacks in the CFL have remarkable resumes, accomplished great things at the college or university level, all of them.
Yeah.
And yet you come they come to the CFL, they start collecting a check, and whatever they were doing in college doesn't carry forward to the pro level. It's the weirdest thing. It's so perplexing.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it also, like, because he's talented, but how many times have we seen guys with big arms, lots of talent, and their decision-making process is just, not there. It's just not equal to the gun they have or the talent they have, and it always comes back to haunt them. So they host the Edmonton Eskimos this Sunday at Investors Group Field. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers do. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 live from the Royal Sports Studio. How do you look at this matchup, and what are some of the keys? Obviously, the one that's most clear is the health of Matt Nichols.
Yeah, and it sounds by all indications he's going to be ready to go. I'll go a little further and wonder if Travis Bond is going to play. Patton Neufeld can get the job done, but he's not Travis Bond, the big body of Travis Bond, so I wonder about that for sure. But Matt Nichols looks to be full go, and you get Edmonton team in here that was playing pretty strong down the stretch. This is a coin flip game, right? The Bomber defense is going to have to continue to manufacture some turnovers. They also have had trouble big time in the past at really containing Mike Riley. In a big game when Mike Riley needs to go and win, he's going to be using his legs, and that has caused all kinds of trouble for the Bomber defense in the past. So it's a lot of pressure on the special teams to be perfect, the offense to be very effective, and it's just kind of hang on and pray with the defense and hope that Mike Riley doesn't put too many points up.
Yeah, and you might, if you're the Bombers, you might hope for a bit of a weather break coming your way here. Like, I don't think, having the same sort of weather that they got in Calgary on Friday, that might be the best thing for them to try and slow down those Edmonton receivers and like anything you can get to limit Mike Riley in the passing game is going to be beneficial for the Bombers. And I know they had some picks and they look better against Calgary, but I just can't put much faith into the Bombers secondary on their own slowing down Darrell Walker and Zylstra and Bohm. Like, it's a tall task for a good secondary, let alone the struggles the Bombers have had basically all season long. So I think some poor weather would help this team out tremendously. And they're going to need a similar sort of effort from the D-line. Because, yeah, Bo Levi Mitchell wasn't in against Calgary, but that had nothing to do with Opelugo basically pitching up a tent and living in Calgary's, you know, in the Calgary huddle essentially all game long. Like, the Bombers' D-line was tremendous, and they're going to need that same kind of pressure. And like Troy said, there's going to be the balancing act. Like, do you go all out against Mike Riley, or do you kind of play quarterback contain and keep him in the pocket so you avoid the running aspect of his game and try and slow him? Like, it's going to be a tough balancing act for that D-line. I'm not sure how they're going to go.
They won't look anything the way they did against Calgary, I don't believe. Calgary, it was sure obvious, like, cooled off and going home. There was such a remarkable lack of inspiration by Calgary, really, in an overall sense. It'll be the exact opposite of geeked up through the rooftops of IGF when Edmonton gets here.
And listening to Dave Dickinson, I think that was his concern at halftime. Wasn't, you know, maybe Buckley not being very good, or the O-line, or Messam, or it's just, to him, it was like our mindset. He said that a couple times, and this is a guy who's seen his team have dominant regular seasons until the last 1 or 2 weeks of the regular season, go in and just can't go all the way anymore. I think he has major concerns around his group with another week off and going into a playoff game. But I agree with your guys' assessment of the Bombers' defense, and it doesn't help with the key injuries they have there. So to me, it's a matter of outscoring the Eskimos and potentially getting some help from the weather. But you need Bond back. Can Darvin Adams go? How healthy is Matt Nichols? You know, all those key positions on the offense. I think they have to outscore the Eskimos on home field. We'll delve much more into this, of course, but that's where I think the key battle is. It's just you can put up points on Edmonton. We saw the Bombers do that in Edmonton the last time these two teams met. They're 2-0 against the Eskimos this season. Does that sway you at all, the fact that they have beaten Edmonton twice this year?
Well, it doesn't really sway me at all. It's going to be a coin flip game, and I think the best thing, and don't forget, sure, the Bombers are 2-0 against Edmonton, but Edmonton was decimated for a real good chunk of time by injuries as well, and later in the season, right after Labor Day, you get Walker back. Zylstra continues to sort of emerge as a receiver, over 1,600 yards and all the rest of it. So to me, the key specifically is going to be where, yeah, of course, the Bombers have to put up some points, and you can't really tell or know what that number is going to be. It's not hard to imagine on a decent day that it's going to have to be north of 30, though, mm-hmm. with all the damage Edmonton could do. But Matt Nichols and Paul LaPolice have to keep Mike Riley off the field. Like 10, 12-plus play type of drives, real long, drawn out, stay on the field, use your run game, you know, slow things down as much as you can. Don't let Mike Riley, don't let them fall into some sort of a rhythm, and don't let them on the field. Basically, it's one of those sorts of things, I think, where you just, like, Matt Nichols and the offense here can't have much faith whatsoever in their defense. Don't leave it up to the defense. Stay on the field as much as you can, and for the love of God, don't be settling on the leg of Justin Medlock. You have got to be able to cross that goal line on offense.
Are you guys surprised the Eskimos beat Saskatchewan? A lot of people feel Saskatchewan's the best team in the CFL right now, and also playing the best.
Yeah, and Saskatchewan also sat down a couple guys, right? And so I'm not really surprised. Ultimately, I'm just not surprised. I'm not saying here that Saskatchewan put things into effect or you know, did the thing here to go to the East, but it is like they've got a hell of a chance. There's a real good chance it's an all West Grey Cup. I know the West has never done it in the crossover. It will happen eventually. I think this is what, the 10th time maybe that there's been a crossover. All the crossovers have been to the West, and Saskatchewan, it seems to me, guys, like what you're sort of implying here, they are they're poised to really make some noise here. And it was a decent game, but a little bit lacking as well. Like, I guess just not the level of excitement Edmonton and Saskatchewan on that Saturday night.
Yeah, you wanted, like, even for Edmonton, especially once the Bombers win that game and you don't get a home playoff game, like, it just, everything just kind of gets sunk out of the stadium at that point. So, I'm not, you know what, I don't think there's a lot separating the Bombers Edmonton and Saskatchewan. Yeah. Honest, like if any of those teams, any combination of wins, whenever they play, it's you can see it happening, right? So, I don't know. I'm not totally sold on Saskatchewan. You know, just kind of waltzing into the Grey Cup final just yet, because we've seen teams, and hey, look at Edmonton last year, right? Edmonton by all means should have been an all Alberta Grey Cup easily. And yet, for some reason, it's hard to win back-to-back road games in the CFL postseason. And that's something that's going to help the Bombers, no doubt, on Sunday. The fact that Edmonton has to come here, football is one of those sports where it's hella hard to get a win on the road come playoff time. The Bombers, it would have been almost an impossibility, I think, to beat Edmonton in Edmonton, but at least they have the added benefit of the noise and everything on Sunday.
And I think another key is Toronto. Like, I think Toronto's playing some good football right now. So we'll talk more CFL at 8 o'clock when Marshall Ferguson joins us here on The Big Show on TSN 1290. Interesting tweet from Aaron, our longtime listener here of TSN 1290 and The Big Show. Ran into four guys in Riders jerseys in St. Louis at the Blues-Leafs game on the weekend. Tried to sell me West semifinal tickets after their loss to Edmonton. Ha ha. So he was at the Blues-Leafs game on the weekend, and four guys were there in Riders jerseys and tried to sell him West semifinal tickets because they were pretty sure Saskatchewan would be coming to Winnipeg. It'll be a good one nonetheless. The West semifinal this Sunday, much more on that coming up throughout the week and today as well here on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio. Up next, though, as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey tonight at 7, Jets and Stars. Up next, we'll get back into that in our next segment, but up next is what I'm trying to say. We'll talk GSP and, of course, NFL Week 9 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. You can nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. Including this Friday, Jim Tilf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you 53 minutes past the hour. Shouldn't go below minus 10, but it is going to be in the minuses throughout the day today. Snow coming on Wednesday. Winter, gentlemen, is officially here. Also here is Road Sport Auto Credit Hockey tonight at 7 o'clock on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets take on the Dallas Stars at 7. We'll delve into that much more in the next hour. And, of course, we'll have our final giveaway for Hockey Nights in Vegas, our final, fifth and final grand prize winner. And also be joined by Paul Edmonds and Ian Mendez live from Ottawa on the big Matt Duchene trade. That's all coming up on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. Before we get to all of that, gentlemen, it's rather, I don't know if it's called unbelievable, but after 4 years away from the octagon and at a different weight category, George St. Pierre steps into the ring and gets another title with a big win over Mr. Bisbane. What are your thoughts on that? I don't know why I'm surprised, but I'm a little surprised just given his time away and everything else. But then again, it is George St. Pierre, which is what's made him one of the great fighters.
And some people ask, and now has he entered being one of the only four guys to hold a belt in two different classes? Has he pushed himself into possibly greatest of all time? There's an interesting debate with that. And also some of the chatter now about maybe upcoming with him and McGregor. Part of what made me giggle a bunch after a fight, you hear in his post-fight interview, the quote was, "Martial arts is not about who's got the biggest balls. Sorry for my language." That's what GSP said.
So he just said it about three times. He kept swearing.
But just compare about the idiocy of Conor McGregor and what was witnessed not too long ago. Like the spectrum of class between Conor McGregor and GSP is remarkable, huh? The way he presents himself and all the rest of it. And for him, he looked, he had a couple takedowns in the first couple of rounds, but looked like he was in trouble as well. And then to finish it off with that rear naked choke at 4:32 of the third, it was a remarkable and spectacular. And you just kind of wonder what he does now at this point in time. But against a bigger man in Bisping. Right, we talked to Robin Black about it. You got the feeling that most GSP fans or those in a circle were a little bit worried, right? The 4 years you're talking about, JT, up a class, up against a bigger man, all those sorts of things, a guy with all kinds of power in Bisping, and then he's able to do it, man. He was able to pull it off, and he said what GSP said was martial arts is not about who's got the biggest ball, sorry for my language. It's about technique, setting traps, and intelligence. I was fighting a bigger man, and I was trying to prove it to all my fans. And the level of intelligence, and I love that doc on TSN when they called him a scientist in the octagon. Everyone who knows and follows UFC at all knows that's what GSP is, right? He's not an angry fighter. He is a scientist and a pure technician in there. It was wonderful to see him win.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest UFC fan in the world. It just mixed martial arts in general. But near the end of that fight, I found myself basically jumping up and down, screaming at the top of my lungs for GSP to finish Bisping. And I was just kind of surprised. I guess it's just the Canadian factor thing, but I was totally invested into the fight when I didn't really have plans to go out of my way to watch it to begin with. And that's how awesome is that? You know, like he's just one of the greats. Like, that's what greats do. You take time off, you fight a bigger man, you have no chance, seemingly, or the odds are stacked against you, and he comes out on top.
The only thing I dislike about the whole stuff, and I like most of it, I'm not a diehard fan like some people, but just Bisping spends a whole week being, you know, Conor McGregor.
Beacon away.
And then at the end, it's like all utmost respect, and he beat me, and, you know, I was just trying to be entertaining. Like, is it not getting a little bit wrestling leading into this? We saw this with Conor McGregor, too. I get it's entertainment, but the over-the-top, you're a loser, I'm going to kick your ass, blah, 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 blah. And then at the end of it, he goes, hey, I just wanted to entertain you guys and stuff. Like, just
be real.
Be real. Yourself. Be honest. Like, you know, I know you think you're going to beat him, but all the other shenanigans around this is getting a little bit of a gong show to me. But, yeah, congratulations to GSP after 4 years out of the octagon. Go up a weight class and win another belt. We will talk NFL for sure, but up next we get into the Matt Duchene trade. Ian Mendez joins us on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
One segment away from calling our fifth and final grand prize winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas here on The Big Show and the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. Lots to get to as well in this hour, but none bigger than announcing our fifth and final grand prize winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And as you sit by the phone, you might want to start packing because days from now, you'll be on your way to Las Vegas to catch the Winnipeg Jets and the Las Vegas Golden Knights, four-night stay, and of course, $1,290 cash, MGM Grand, free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson Airport, whole big package to give to you coming up in our very next segment. Bottom of the hour, the voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, going to join us live from Dallas as it is a Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Stars and Dallas as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Jets hockey tonight, the first of three on the road. This very next segment, though, is brought to you by Olympic Building Center with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, and it's with our good friend from TSN 1200 in Ottawa, Mr. Ian Mendez. Ian, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks. Great piece from you and some insight on how long Mr. Pierre Dorion has coveted Matt Duchene as a forward. The deal is finally done. First of all, we'll get your assessment of it and then get into the details of how long this has been going on.
Yeah, this is, I think we can all agree that the last 18 months or so, Matt Duchene has been the prize target out there in the NHL, right? I mean, I think if you were to look at players available or appear to be available, I'm not sure anybody has the pedigree of Matt Duchene. And so Pierre Dorion's been extremely, extremely aggressive in trying to get him. And I don't think that anybody foresaw a scenario in which Kyle Turris would be involved in a trade for Duchene until TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger floated that idea out, guys. I think it was opening night. Dregs came to town and essentially said, don't rule out the possibility of Ottawa using Kyle Turris in some manner to get Matt Duchene. And here we are about a month later, and that absolutely came to fruition. So I think there's a lot of people sort of looking at this, and there's a lot of disappointed people in this market too. That Kyle was one of the most popular players that has ever played here. He did a ton of work in the community. He's just a really likable guy from that perspective, pretty productive player as well. So to see him sort of get pushed out the door to bring in Matt Duchene, there's still some people that feel like it's a lateral move. Is Matt Duchene significantly better than Turris that you end up giving up some assets for? I guess we'll find out the answer, but certainly makes things a lot more interesting around here.
Do you yourself like the move, Ian?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I am a Turris guy. I've always liked kind of what he brought to the table. The only issue is, if they couldn't get a deal hammered out with him, then I do like the deal and like the trade. And it sure as heck sounds like they weren't able to come close to an extension on Turris. And so I think at that point, realistically, when you're the general manager, you need to say to yourself, okay, well, we can let the situation play out with Turris. We can get close to the trade deadline. And then after that, we can maybe let him walk for nothing at unrestricted free agency. Or we can strike now while we think we could potentially make a deal happen here and make a deal. So I think if, from the perspective of straight up, if you're asking me, is it worth giving up a first-round pick, a third-round pick, your last year's first-round pick, and Kyle Turris, and you get back Matt Duchene? My answer to that is no. But if you knew in your heart of hearts you weren't going to be able to bring back Turris, that's a complete game-changer for me. So I think that's the indication I seem to get from this situation, is that there was no chance to bring back Turris. He was going to probably walk out the door for nothing. So if you could turn that, plus those assets I mentioned before, into Matt Duchene, and you have Duchene for basically two more years, well, I think that makes the deal a lot more palatable.
What went wrong with Turris in Ottawa?
And you know what, Jim, that's the great question. I think when you look at this, I thought in the summertime this is going to be the easiest deal on earth. I thought 6 times 6, get it done, who says no? Like, honestly, I said, who says no? If Ottawa came to Turris and said, here's 6 years, $6 million per, would the Turris camp say no? I don't think so. Would the Ottawa camp say no? I didn't think so. And then when we got to training camp and there was nothing done, and it didn't sound like it was close, that's when I figured we got storm clouds on the horizon, because Kyle had told me in the summer he wanted something done before training camp. He didn't want to come into camp and have to answer questions and have it be a distraction. And sure enough, once we got to camp and it wasn't a done deal, that's when I think I realized that something was going on. So I know it sounds like, and when you listen to Bob McKenzie and Darren Dreger, they're extremely plugged in. And when they tell you that the Turris camp never was really budging off of 7 or 8 years, I guess you got to take that to the bank. I think a little bit, what's a little frustrating if you're an Ottawa fan is you see that he signed for that aforementioned 6 years, $6 million per, and you think, well, was that a stumbling block in Ottawa? The only thing to remember is 6 years at $36 million in the state of Tennessee is worth a little bit more than 6 years at $6 million in the province of Ontario, right, when you factor in some taxes and things of that nature. So in terms of take-home pay, Kyle Turris is making a little bit more money in Nashville. And, again, I don't know. I'm not privy to the parameters. All I know is it seemed like Ottawa was reluctant, for whatever reason, to go super long-term on Kyle Turris.
Ian, that's pretty complex, the whole salary cap situation for the Sens right now when you look at it, and the job ahead for Dorion. When you've got Mark Stone, who becomes an RFA with arbitration rights after this season, couple years you got Carlson, you have arguably two of the worst contracts in the NHL with Bobby Ryan, and 5 years left at 7.25. Dion Phaneuf, 4 years left at $7 million. There's going to be some real difficult, strange times upcoming.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what kind of is happening here. I think they understood that they probably, and again, they wanted Matt Duchene, okay? So let's make that clear. They've coveted Duchene for a while. They wanted Duchene. I think they realized, okay, well, we can't re-sign Turris and Stone and Carlson and trade for Duchene. So let's prioritize here. I think they made a priority out of Carlson and Stone and basically said, well, I'm not sure we can re-up Turris. The interesting thing is they're going to have to re-up Matt Duchene in 2 years. In the summer of 2019, they're going to be looking at new deals from Erik Karlsson and Matt Duchene. And what's interesting is they have not been a cap team before. They're going to need to be a cap team now, because you're gonna have to break the bank on Carlson. Let's all agree that's gonna be north of $10 million per at minimum. And what's Matt Duchene gonna be worth in 2 years as he's heading down to restricted free agency? If he's a 25-30 goal scorer, he's probably gonna command north of $6-7 million. So they do have some interesting cap situations. I do think that in some way, shape, or form, Kyle Turris was the first casualty of that, in that they had something coming up with Turris this year, and they figured instead of getting into bed with Kyle Turris for 6, 7, 8 years, it's better to cut bait with him now and again, try and move some assets and bring in somebody who's controllable for 2 more years in Matt Duchene.
Ian Mendez is joining us from TSN 1200 in Ottawa this morning on The Big Show as well on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. It is 13 minutes past the hour with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. This segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. So I've been pretty hard on Joe Sakic through this whole situation. 18 months ongoing for Matt Duchene and what they could get for him. I am stunned that he got 7 assets for Matt Duchene in this trade. Are you?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you go back and you look at some of the rumors of, you know, that they wanted to pick a prospect and, you know, a roster player, some other asset, for them to walk away with, like you said, 7 pieces to this. Now, I mean, is it really 6 pieces? Is Andrew Hammond really a piece? I mean, I don't know. From Ottawa's perspective, they were just happy to dump the contract, but it is an asset. It's Andrew, I think, is a National Hockey League goaltender, so if they need a goaltender in a pinch or somebody to back up Varlamov, or if something happens to Varlamov, I think Andrew Hammond can come in and do a competent job. But it's an interesting case study, right? Because you think of, remember when Steve Yzerman hung on to Jonathan Drouin and hung on to him, and people said, my goodness, like, oh man, you've just watched the asset diminish. Well, what happened? He hung on to him long enough to get Mikhail Sergachev out of Montreal, and I don't think anybody thought that that was a situation that was going to play out that way, especially when it was very public that Drouin wanted out. Well, it was very public that Matt Duchene wanted out, and you would have thought that Joe Sakic was painted into a corner. And I know that there were some general managers frustrated with his sort of lack of commitment on a deal. And now I don't think you can sit here on whatever we are, the 5th or 6th of November, and criticize Joe Sakic. He hung on to an asset not past the point of getting return. I think he got more than fair return. I mean, he gets a first-round pick from Ottawa next year. He gets Ottawa's last, you know, just from Ottawa's perspective, Shane Bowers, the kid they took in the first round last season. So you're sitting pretty, I think, if you're Joe Sakic, and I think you've somewhat vindicated yourself against all that criticism that you were overly patient on the Duchene situation.
In an overall sense now, going forward here, Ian, as the Sens sit in second place in the Atlantic, do you like where they're at and what the future looks like for a team for them?
Well, Troy, they have to now make the playoffs and make some noise. You can't trade a first-round pick next year, last year's first-round pick, you know, let Kyle Turris walk out the door. You can't do all that stuff. You couldn't have traded Alex Burrows last year, giving up a pretty high-end prospect in Jonathan Dahlin. You couldn't have traded pieces a couple of years ago to get Bobby Ryan, to get Dion Phaneuf. Like, these are win-now trades. You don't trade for Bobby Ryan, Dion Phaneuf, Alex Burrows, and Matt Duchene and say, well, you know what, we've got a 3-year plan. We'd like to go, you know, in 2020. No, you're saying you want to win the Stanley Cup now. And I don't think there's a choice here, guys. They can't. My other point is, I don't think they can just sneak in as a wild card team. I think you've essentially pushed your chips into the middle of the table here, saying we have to win while Erik Karlsson is under contract. He's got this year and next year. We need to do something. We need to strike while the iron is hot. And every single move Pierre Dorion has ever made since he's taken over as general manager is to try and win a Stanley Cup in Erik Karlsson's window. And I think yesterday was just another example of that.
Great stuff, Ian, as always. Great insight, and well done on the piece, too. We put it out. It's at TSN.ca on the insight of Pierre Dorion and this trade going down, acquiring Matt Duchene. Thanks for your time, as always. Enjoy the rest of your week.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great one.
Thanks, brother. Take care, man.
This segment was a presentation of Olympic Buildings. Buildings straightforward or complex, it's what they do best. Tour their projects at Olympic-Buildings.ca. This is The Big Show, and up next, we qualify no more. It is time to give away our 5th and final grand prize for Hockey Nights in Vegas. We do that next on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Live from the Royal Sports Studio on a Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, it's Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you. Tonight at 7, we bring you some road sport auto credit to Winnipeg Jets hockey as they take on the Stars. But right now, as the Winnipeg Jets will leave Dallas tonight after the game and head to Las Vegas, we want to announce and call our fifth and final grand prize winner to get you to Vegas this week to see the Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Mr. Ruwicki is on the phones and is going to call our fifth and final grand prize winner. And what fun this has been.
We were unable to complete your call.
Oh,
the live
man.
Calls are always fun, too.
They are fun. Do you know what
I was thinking of a different word that starts with F and E.
Good old Fat Fingers Ruwicki over there trying to dial the phone.
Okay. They're swollen from a birthday weekend. That's down right, south. They're yeah. swollen from... You got to dehydrate, or hydrate, I should say, a little bit and get those pudgy stumpers down a bit. we're in the process. We're going to call our fifth and final grand prize winner. It is a female, regular TSN listener, but sounds like her husband is. She's not a regular winner or listener, but her husband is, and she called in to try and do this together. And her husband is a gigantic hockey fan. So we've also already given it away that it is a female winner. We'll just see if we can get them on the line here.
Got a couple of female winners. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and we appreciate that.
Yeah.
As always. Much like the Boss Pizza fan line.
It's going to be fun when we hit the tarmac to the charter. I guess the winners of this will be flying on a different plane than us. We're going to be in an extra fancy one. And Brooksy's really hooking us up, JT.
An extra fancy one.
Yeah.
Any plane to me is fancy.
Twin Otter.
Yes, it is.
We found her.
Good morning. Is this Karen Christiak?
Yes, it is. Good morning. I'm so glad you called.
Good morning, Karen. What are you doing up so early?
Well, it's 7 o'clock.
That's true. Time to get on with your day. This is Jim Toth, Troy Weston, and Brandon Ruwicki from The Big Show.
I'm so happy you called. I'm shaking.
Well, Karen, we're calling just to thank you for entering our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest. You didn't win, but we want to thank you live on the air for supporting us.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. You're our fifth and final grand prize winner. You and a lucky guest are on your way to Vegas for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, I don't even know what to say. Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Well, let me remind you what all you have won. As TSN 1290 is pumped to announce our fifth and final trip winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas, it is Karen Christiak. We're sending Karen and a guest to Las Vegas this Thursday. Pack your bags because it's this Thursday.
I'm packed in an hour. I'm in there.
Through the 13th, you'll be there from Thursday to the 13th, where you'll watch the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday night at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply you two hockey tickets and free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport from Park and Fly, redtag.ca. We'll provide return airfare to and from Vegas and four nights accommodations at a little place called the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino. And you know what, Karen?
What?
We're also going to throw in $1,290 cash for any extras you want to take in while you're there.
Goodness, I think I'll have a new pair of shoes when I'm
A new pair of shoes. Karen wants a new pair of shoes. You're going to get it. Congrats, Karen. Congrats to all our Hockey Nights in Vegas winners headed to the Strip this week. Big thanks to redtag.ca for making this happen, where Canada shops for great travel deals. Karen, do you know who you're taking? I'm understanding it will be your husband.
I'm taking my husband. Yes, I am.
He's a giant hockey fan?
He is a giant hockey fan. I am too, yes, but he's a bigger fan than I am, for sure.
You know, I'm not going to tell you how to run your marriage, but I would think a pair of shoes would come from your husband, and you could spend the $1,290 on something else if you're going to take them.
I'm sure. sure he'll be able to. I'm sure we'll figure something out with that, for sure, yeah.
We understand you qualified with Kevin Hrushevsky in the Don Vito Roundtable, so we appreciate your patience in waiting to get your name drawn. And we congratulate you wholeheartedly, Karen. You and your husband and four other lucky grand prize winners and their guests are off to Vegas this Thursday, courtesy of RedTag.ca and us here at TSN 1290. Thank you for listening, and congratulations.
Let's go. Thank you.
Have fun, Karen.
All the best, Karen. We'll get your details to you shortly. Thanks for listening, and congratulations once again. Matt!
How awesome was that?
Oh, that's outstanding when people get that exciting. This contest was so much fun. I wish we could keep going. I wish we had something else to do.
We'll have to rummage something up. Well, you know what? We'll brainstorm as we're flying down to Vegas Friday after the show.
Well, Jimmy, we're not done yet. From the fabulous folks who brought you Hockey Nights in Vegas, it's a bonus prize package the whole family will love. Well, two of them. It's Touchdown in O-Town. That's right. You're going to the 105th Grey Cup in Ottawa. Your prize package includes return airfare for two, three nights accommodations in the nation's capital, and two great seats at TD Place to see the 105th Grey Cup game. All this week, listen for your chance to qualify at 7:15, 8:15, 12:15, and 5:15. We'll announce the winner this time next Monday. It's Touchdown in O-Town, and it could be yours. From everybody's favorite sports pals and gals at TSN 1290.
Unbelievable.
Just Raccoon when I Carney having a bit of fun with that.
Thought the fun was going to end. We're going to keep it going here on TSN 1290 as we present Touchdown in O-Town. We're sending two listeners to Ottawa to check out the 105th Grey Cup game at TD Place Sunday, November 26th.
It's Touchdown in O-Town. Be the 12th caller right now at 780-1290 for your chance to qualify to win a trip and tickets to the 105th Grey Cup in Ottawa from TSN 1290. Or text Touchdown now to 129090 for your chance to qualify. Standard message rates apply for text entry requests.
780-1290, we're keeping the fun going all this week if you want in to qualify. And if you qualified for Hockey Nights in Vegas, you have to re-qualify. So ring those phones, 780-1290, and we'll start taking qualifiers for Touchdown O-Town. See if we can get you and a guest to the 105th Grey Cup in Ottawa. 12th caller through qualifies, and we'll be back with more, including Paul Edmonds on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Live from the Royal Sports Studio, it's The Big Show. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 34 minutes past the hour. And congratulations to Karen once again, our fifth grand prize winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And congrats to all five of our grand prize winners and their guests who will leave for Sin City on Thursday. See the Jets, Golden Knights, four nights accommodation, MGM Grand, $1,290 cash, free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport. And thank you to all of you who have qualified, and because of that, we decided to do one more thing. It's called Touchdown O-Town by TSN 1290 presents, sending two lucky listeners to Ottawa to check out the 105th Grey Cup game at TD Place Sunday, November the 26th. It includes return airfare to and from Ottawa, departing from Winnipeg on Friday, November the 24th. Three nights of accommodations in Ottawa, November 24th to the 26th. Two tickets to both Friday and Saturday night Grey Cup Festival concerts at TD Place, including live performances by Sloan, Ruben in the Dark, and Dwayne Gretzky on Friday, and Trooper and April Wine on Saturday, plus two tickets to Sunday's sold-out Grey Cup game at TD Place. You can listen for your chance to qualify this week, Monday to Friday at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 5:15 p.m., or enter now. Enter now at tsn1290.ca for bonus chance to qualify. Winner will be announced next Monday, November the 13th, on The Big Show, Touchdown O-Town, presented by TSN 1290. For more information, once again, visit tsn1290.ca. Our first qualifier is Marie Vanderkeer. Congratulations, Marie, and we'll do it again in the next hour right here on The Big Show. We can't help ourselves. We love to give stuff away. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, as the Jets are in Big D to take on Central Division rival the stars as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Hockey tonight at 7 with Brian Munns analyzing everything that Mr. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, throws down. And Mr. Paul Edmonds joins us right now on the big show. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good. Good morning. Is it analyzing or criticizing?
It depends. Well, you know what? That's a great segue to start this segment with you, which is brought to you by Gauthier Chevrolet on McPhillips. Gauthier Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster's. Great deals and also a chance to get a Vegas vacation for two included when you purchase most new vehicles. The segue being, Paul, do you criticize that effort against Montreal or do you analyze it given the fact that they got a point?
A little bit of both for me. First off, you know, I think in analyzing it, you can definitely see that the Winnipeg Jets didn't really have their legs early on and were a little bit behind Montreal. Full marks for Montreal for the way they played the game. They were quick, they were fast, they were on the puck, they were aggressive. And it really kind of had the Winnipeg Jets on their heels. But as a result, I thought Winnipeg, as the game kind of wore along, and their goaltender was superb again. I mean, Connor Hellebuck, we keep talking about him. It's the story of the year so far as Jets are concerned. As they roll along, you seem to feel like Winnipeg Jets are starting to get some momentum, and they're starting to grind a little bit, and they're starting to get some zone time. And even though they're not generating a lot of shots on the clock, and they're badly outshot, as everybody knows, that they're starting to get some things put together. There's shift after shift, and then they would take a penalty. And the penalties weren't very good. You know, you can call them whatever you want, use whatever adjective you want, but just not very smart, disciplined hockey at that point. And that would quash the momentum. And then they would either give up a goal or they'd kill off the penalty, and then they'd start to kind of develop into that role again where they get a couple shifts going, and you'd think, okay, here they come again, and then they take another penalty. So it was a bad cyclical sort of act from that standpoint. But yet, for as poorly as many of us felt that they were playing, or they weren't as, you know, on the puck, or they were a little bit more sluggish than we had seen them play for the last little while, the biggest maybe criticism I would have of their play in their game was they had a 4-2 lead at one point with 8 minutes left to go in your own building. You need to lock that down, and they couldn't hold it. And as a result, you get a point, that's great. But there was 2 points for the taking there on a night where they didn't have their best game and maybe their best legs underneath them. I just feel that at 4-2, a two-goal lead at home with 8 minutes left in the third period, you've got to get to the point where that clock runs down and you get 2 points out of that. Still, it's a non-conference game, so it doesn't hurt them, and the point does help them, and we'll see how they bounce back tonight. But it was a little bit both for me, Jimmy.
I'm finding as the games go by, early to start the season, Paulie, there's a fair amount of criticism, skepticism with Brendan Tanev. Paul Maurice always spoke so highly of him, loved how he flew around, but it seemed like that was maybe almost all that he was capable of. No real point production coming into the season and some trouble with possession numbers. But every couple, every game that goes by now, there'll be a couple few plays that he really stands out, and there is a couple real good ones. The feed to Kopp in front of the net. There was also a great stick that he had in the game where he was able to create a turnover, fly down the right side to create a scoring chance. Would you say his game's really rounding into form?
Well, I would definitely say that there's a confidence level, Westy, that I think has come with that. Certainly, I think as a younger guy, and he's 25, so let's not call him all that young, but a guy that, you know, comes out of college and gets inserted right away and plays three games in his first year and then makes the team last year and is kind of in and out of the lineup and doesn't get a whole lot of ice and is an extreme role player. That's it. I mean, maybe penalty kill and a fourth line sort of guy that, he's leading your team in hits. And all of a sudden now, he's got comfortable in that role. And now he's started to add on to his game. And he's playing with another guy that's got some speed in Andrew Kopp and another guy that's got some decent size in Sean Matthias. And things are starting to come together. And I thought that that line the other night was the line that was driving things for the Winnipeg Jets on a consistent basis. know, the Shifley line certainly had some chances, and Line A ended up scoring a goal, and Ehlers was effective as well. But I thought that the consistently more effective line was that Kopp line with Tanev, because those two guys were flying, and Paul was putting them out there every second, every third shift to try to get some momentum or keep the momentum or get something going in a positive way or up the tempo for the Winnipeg Jets in the game. Brandon Tanev has started to add on to his game, and you can see that he's very comfortable with where he is in his National Hockey League career now, and a little bit more finish certainly would be great, but the fact that he's starting to develop and create chances off of what he's doing with that speed of his and his ability to get on the puck, body check you, separate you from the puck in your own zone, or as he did the other night, and I think you're talking about that play, it was a play in his own zone, and he got to the puck first, chipped and chased around the defenseman, and then all of a sudden he's picking up the puck at center ice, and it's an odd man situation walking in. You'd like to see more of that, and I think that you will, because I think Brandon Tanev's game has another level to get to. But I think it starts with getting comfortable with where you are and what you're asked to be to do in your role, and to get to where the systematic play is such that you don't have to think about it anymore. You just react, and the coaches now trust you, and there's a great symbiotic relationship there. So, you know, he's been a real good player for a guy that was maybe a question mark and a bubble guy at the start of the year, and people were wondering why he was on the roster to start. And now he finds himself certainly in a situation where he's on a third line and playing a pretty regular shift. I think he's come a long way, and he certainly provided a value to the Winnipeg Jets with the way that he plays.
Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, joining us live from Dallas this morning on the big show, TSN 1290. He will bring you, along with Brian Munns, Road Sport Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey tonight as the Jets take on the Stars in a Central Division battle. Do you expect Adam Lowry back? And when you do, there's a lineup or a changeup that has to be done with the lineup. Paul, what do you think going into tonight's game and the rest of this week with three games on the road?
Well, we'll know a little bit more today. I think Adam Lowry is ready to come back, and I'm just wondering if they just want to maybe give him another skate in the morning or another practice day with the practices coming up that they have, certainly in Vegas on Wednesday and Thursday, leading up to that back-to-back scenario with Vegas and Arizona as the back end of this trip. So question mark today, but I think he's pretty close to returning. Wouldn't be surprised if he was inserted into the lineup tonight. So the easy decision there is that if Adam Lowry comes back in, then Andrew Kopp moves over to the wing, okay, so that your centers continue to be Shifley, Little, Lowry, and Hendricks. The more difficult part of that is who comes out of the lineup. And I think this goes back to the question I just answered from Troy, that the bottom six know that somebody's got to come out when Lowry comes back in. So they're looking over their shoulder. And they're playing a little bit more motivated to stay in the lineup for sure, maybe scared, if you will. So easy decision on where Lowry comes back in when he does, and that could, as we mentioned, be as early as tonight. But the tough decision is who comes out of the lineup and who earns press box duty, because they're maybe the one guy that's a little bit short on those bottom six. But I think Andrew Kopp's done a real good job in the middle, and now because of his versatility, you can flip him back over to the wall and put Lowry in his regular spot, which is going to help the Winnipeg Jets for some face-off time, line matching for sure on a road trip like this, and then also with Lowry's ability to play some penalty kills. So there's some decisions that are easier than others. The tough one is who comes out when he comes back in, if he does today.
Things were downright snarly just a few days ago against the Stars. Should we expect that pretty much right out of the gate, you figure?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that everybody kind of enjoyed playing that game. It was a snarl to it for sure, but there was also a great tempo to the game. And I think that is sort of what we're going to see, or what we see now and have become used to seeing in the Central Division, where there's a real good pace to it. But, you know, you better have your head up and on a swivel, because somebody's going to come to try to finish their check on you. Rarity is that we saw a couple fights in the game, and I don't know if that's going to continue here tonight, but certainly there was a level of angst between the two that we hadn't seen a lot of this year. And I do think that there's a part of the Dallas Stars that have really tried to assert themselves in that role against the Winnipeg Jets, because Tyler Seguin told us before the game in the morning skate and availability the other day that they're tired of losing to Winnipeg. And he mentioned that emphatically, especially in Winnipeg, he said. So I think they want to come out and probably redeem themselves a little bit tonight, and that might be a way for them to do that. They can play that game. They can get up the ice like the Winnipeg Jets. They skate very well, and they've got a lot of high-end talent. But they also can play a little bit more physical. They've got some big bodies as well, great patterns, certainly. I think was trying to exact his will on some of the Winnipeg Jets with his forcefulness. And you see Jamie Benn want to fight Dustin Byfuglien. So I think we're going to expect what we saw the other night. And don't be surprised if you get to see more than just six goals scored, and it gets a little bit more higher scoring as to maybe eight combined goals or nine combined goals in this building here tonight. That's one thing about these two teams is they played that way, Westy, but there's always never been a shortage of goal scoring between the two teams when they've gotten together.
After the game, you fly to Sin City. There's an off day, and then the Jets will play their first game against the Golden Knights in Las Vegas. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, kind of looking forward to it. I mean, I think certainly, you know, Manitoba is as well. There was a lot of people that were heading when we were getting on the bird yesterday. There was a couple of other charter jets that were heading down to Nevada as well in Las Vegas. And there's a lot of different plans that have gone on, Jim, that I've heard that people are going to go down and station down in Phoenix and then drive up from Phoenix to Las Vegas for the game and then drive back down. Or they're going to go to Vegas and then do the same thing, just reversed. So I think a lot of people are really looking forward to this trip. It's an opportunity to kind of get out of the early winter here at home already and see the Winnipeg Jets play on the road and see what Vegas has to kind of offer in terms of a bit of a holiday destination while seeing your favorite hockey team. So, you know, I think the Winnipeg Jets are looking forward to it as well. There's an off day tomorrow for the team, and then there's practice days on Wednesday and Thursday, and then get back at it. But it's something very unique. We've heard a lot about Las Vegas, certainly with the franchise, the 31st in the National Hockey League coming in. Now we get to see it tangibly, and certainly the fan base and the hockey team, they're off to a tremendous start. And I guess when you look at it now, there's no reason to believe that that's not going to continue with the way they built that team through the expansion draft. So it'll be a real good test for the Winnipeg Jets coming up with back-to-back games. And then, you know, after that, you've got a team that's got two wins all year. And to me, it's another one of those trap games. So there's a lot of difficulty for the Winnipeg Jets in this trip. You've got this divisional rival here tonight against Dallas. You've got this upstart expansion team coming up on Friday. And then on Saturday, you've got this team that has not fared very well in their own building. So there's three different challenges for three different reasons for the Winnipeg Jets, and we'll see how many they meet.
Should be a good one tonight as well on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars tonight at 7:30 on TSN 1290. 7:30 tonight, and Paul Edmonds will be calling the action here on TSN 1290. Thanks for this, Paul. Enjoy the game.
My pleasure, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Paulie. Take care, man.
Up next on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour, we get into your NHL news and notes from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Till, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you on the Big Show. 52 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll get back into the CFL. Marshall Ferguson joins us, and much more to come on the National Hockey League as well, including right now with NHL news and notes on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. I want to get into the standings as we start a new week, gentlemen, but first and foremost, let's get your thoughts on the Matt Duchene to Ottawa, Kyle Turris to Nashville, and gets a six-year, $36 million deal. And then, of course, the seven assets that Joe Sakic, surprisingly to me, credit to him, I've been hard on him about why this is taking so long and what more he could possibly want. He gets seven assets in the dealing of Matt Duchene. Your thoughts on the trade?
Well, these things, and especially when you got so many moving pieces here, you can't measure this for, I don't know, 3-4 years, right? Like some sort of timeline needs to go by, especially with some of this young talent that was picked up and let go. Short term, Ottawa just kind of breaks even, I suppose, as far as impact today. You got to love what Nashville ends up getting in grabbing a guy like Kyle Turris. So I think I think when you look and you go, okay, well, who's going to be affected the very most short term out of the gate? You'd go to Nashville. You wonder long term, though, you know, the impact. But just a real dynamic blockbuster thing that finally puts, for the love of God, thank you so very much, this Matt Duchene thing to bed. But I like taking a step back and looking at it this year. I think I like it the very most for Nashville.
Yeah, that's how I see it too. Because, I mean, man, Ottawa gave up a ton to get what, marginally better at center. You know what? Like, I love Matt Duchene. I think he'll get a higher level of play out of him than what we've seen in Colorado the past few years. But it's not like Kyle Turris is a slouch either. You know, a guy that's going to be good for right around 30 goals for you up the middle, and you give up your first round pick last year. I don't know. I don't really get it from the Senators' perspective. I think if they were to make this move, for me to like it, at least as a Sens fan, I'd be okay with them going the prospects and picks route, and then you could have a 1-2 punch down the middle of Turris and Duchene if you really want to go all in for this year. But yeah, I think Nashville and Colorado are the clear winners, but I think the Preds are the biggest winner in this deal, because they're the ones who now can slot Kyle Turris in at their number two center spot. And I think they're the best team in the Central now. I don't see a weakness. I don't.
Well, that's how
show me the weakness on Nashville right now.
That's how it affects the Jets. Is Nashville? Did they get stronger? And I saw a great tweet earlier today, gentlemen. Like, for those people who say it's hard to make deals in the cap era, look at David Poile. David Poile for years now has been pulling off major trades, not just minor ones, but major trades under the cap. And you just said it, is Nashville, you know, a step above everybody now with this deal in the Central?
We will see. It's certainly better, right? Which is scary for everybody.
National Hockey League standings on NHL News and Notes here on the Big Show, TSN 1290, live from the Royal Sports Studio. And we'll start with, I guess we'll just go in the division. And the Winnipeg Jets head into this week with three road games. Tonight in Dallas, Friday in Las Vegas, and Saturday in Arizona, second in the Central with 17 points in 13 games. St. Louis leads with 23 points in 15 games. Dallas, Colorado, Nashville, Chicago are all 1 point behind the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets have a game in hand on Dallas, Colorado, Nashville, two on Chicago. Minnesota has 12 points. As we head into this week, the Jets are second in the Central.
And there's no team in the Central with a losing record right now, right? Many with your worst record at 5-5-2. This is a battle royale, like pretty much the entire free hockey world estimated that it would be. As you just pointed out, 2 through 5, within 1 point, the Jets do have a game in hand on Dallas, Colorado, Nashville, couple on Chicago. A lot of people, you know, JT may be starting to look a little bit smart here, as who picked Chicago to miss the playoffs, and there's all kinds of concern here right now with Chicago. A little bit. So this is just going to be fun. And it's, as we talked about last week, boys, this isn't going anywhere. This isn't a fleeting moment in the Central or during this 82-game schedule. Every single week, every day, game that goes by, we're going to be just mesmerized by how tight and nasty it's going to be.
Yeah, it sucks. Right? Like, in the crate, like, you look at Colorado and it's like, okay, well, Duchene's out of the picture. They should fall back. But Minnesota wins two in a row and they'll just flip-flop spots with Colorado, and it's not like anything really changes here. It's going to be kind of the ultimate roller coaster, because it's not even like if you win two or three in a row, you vault up the standings. You just kind of almost maintain where you are. But whatever team drops two or three in a row, the Jets, for example, if they do that, can go from second to sixth in the matter of just a couple of days.
Yeah.
Road Sport Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey on the station tonight, TSN 1290, 7:30 between the Stars and the Jets. We'll get back into the CFL. Marshall Ferguson joins the Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Big Show.
You know, kind of, is that a question? I can't. That's one of my massive pet peeves. When people talk like this, and they, you know, they, well, like, what is that? And how did this ever start?
Years ago, when I was fortunate enough to freelance at CTV, that's how I called my first curling highlights. And
on
he
purpose?
draws into the forefoot. takes a deuce. He tries to hit the button, but goes through the house. But then I learned the beautiful game, and now I'm like, nice draw to the forefoot.
That's funny.
That'll set up a nice guard. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca as the Winnipeg Jets are in Dallas to take on Central Division rivals, the Dallas Stars, as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit. Winnipeg Jets hockey tonight on the station at 7:30. The afternoon ride goes from 3 till 6:30. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin O from 6:30 till 7:30. And then Olszewski and Friends will have the Huron Windows postgame show as well. Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9 o'clock. Lots to get to concerning the Jets, the Blue Bombers beating the Stamps and hosting a playoff game, NFL Week 9, GSP, and of course, we announced our fifth and final grand prize winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Congratulations to Karen, but we liked it so much. RedTag.ca and TSN 1290 is presenting Touchdown O-Town as we are sending one lucky listener and their guest to the Ottawa Grey Cup coming up. So we'll qualify that in our next segment as well. Up next, though, our good friend Marshall Ferguson, Tiger Cats play-by-play man, and of course, a big part of TSN 1150 in Hamilton. Good morning, Marshall.
Hey, Jim. I'm impressed being able to fly through all of those reads, man. I got to learn from you.
Hey, it's only taken about 23 years, and if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that I don't get half of the pronunciations right, so it's still a work in progress. Thanks for joining us today. First of all, are you shocked the Bombers went into Calgary and got a win to solidify a home playoff date?
You know, I don't think shock is necessarily the word I would use, but surprise. Like, Calgary is not what we thought they were, at least at the back end of the regular season, albeit that they were a different team, of course, without Bo Levi Mitchell and all the rest, but I was actually looking at some of the stats that the CFL sends out to all of us media types, and the three-game losing streak for Calgary going into the playoffs was the first time since 1957. And you could make the argument that that should be a four-game losing streak because they should have lost in Hamilton against the Tiger Cats if the Ticats don't give up that pass interference call on the final play of the ball game on the Hail Mary thrown down by Bo Levi. So the Calgary doesn't look great right now, but I don't think that takes anything away, in my opinion, of what the Bombers were able to do there. That was hellish conditions, man. Like, and I know people say, well, it's the CFL and you're going to get that and all the rest, but I don't care what you say. The first time that hit for those players, guys that haven't necessarily been around, or even if you have been around, that's still a shock to the system. So I always admire specifically quarterback play when you're able to actually handle the football and be able to move it the way you want and kind of shape the football over linebackers in front of safeties or throwing wide side outs and even little things like throwing screen passes and whatnot, the dink and dunk stuff, that can be really, really tough in those conditions. So I was impressed by Matt Nichols and the way that he was able to kind of approach that. I thought they were pretty creative and varied in their offense with the way it went. I thought their front seven for Winnipeg looked really good, being able to get after the quarterback, whether it was Buckley or Stanzi. So they're in good shape right now. I think that they looked nice coming out of that ballgame.
Will Saskatchewan represent the East at the Grey Cup?
Oh, man, I'm struggling with this so much. I actually have to fly to Regina coming up in about 10 hours here because I'm going out with the CFL.ca crew to go cover the Riders for 2 days out there and then come back to cover Ottawa before the East semifinal. But I guess the best answer I can give you is I'll know better in 2 days after I've been around the team, because from being away from Regina and just watching what they've been able to accomplish and watching the on-field product, Troy, they seem like the most comfortable team in their own skin right now. And I've been saying since the middle of the season to you guys and everybody else I talked to that there was this weird confidence that started to build with the Riders. And I know they've always had that swagger about them, but man, when they got that new building, it just pumps their ego 10 times more, it feels like, than it's ever been pumped before. Cause they're showing everybody the barber shop and they're showing everybody all the little quirks inside the stadium that are so beautiful. Of course, we don't see the away locker room, which you can't even fit a reporter into because it's too skinny. But
so it should be. Yeah.
But those things, it feels like, have empowered the Riders and their fan base to a whole new level. Like, if people out there on the prairies and in Winnipeg thought that you were sick of Riders fans and Riders culture before, oh, just wait until they cross over into the East playoffs here, because if they beat the Red Blacks in their building, which they already did earlier this season in a comeback win against Ryan Lindley, man, there's going to be some oil thrown onto that fire, the gas thrown onto that fire, because they're already feeling so good about themselves. In terms of the on-field product, they're doing it in a different way by playing that two-quarterback system and at times that three-quarterback system. And I respect that because I think that's the right call. I also actually really respect what Chris Jones has done by using Kevin Glenn as the starter and using Brandon Bridge essentially as the reliever to take pressure off of a young quarterback, I think that's really smart. And I think that if you actually go back and watch the throws that Brandon Bridge has made in the first couple of plays where he's been in the game, even though he hasn't started the ball game, they've been bad throws. He got picked off a couple of weeks ago against Montreal in one of his first throws, and he should have been picked off in one of his first throws this past week against the Eskimos when he was in the ball game. So that, to me, is like, yeah, you're trying to take pressure off. That's smart, and clearly you know you need to do that. The Bridge comes in and almost throws picks anyways on those first plays. It's strange. It's different, but that's kind of the Riders right now, and I have zero doubt that they are going to make this a real good ball game, and they're probably going to be the favorite in a lot of people's minds going into Ottawa.
Marshall, the Hamilton Tiger Cats finished with a big win over Montreal, shutting them out. And then the post-game comments and some of the reports I've read out of Hamilton is several players, you know, speaking anonymously, don't want Ken Austin back and said that he'd clearly lost the room and that June Jones likely will not be back. And we hear that a lot in every sport. Oh, this coach has lost the room. He's lost the room. But it sounds like Kent Austin had literally done that. Is he back in any capacity next season in Hamilton?
I get the feeling that he's not going to be back. And the reason that I say that is with confidence is that I talked to a couple of players last year, kind of off the record, off the side, whether it was after practice or in the offseason and whatnot, and they just said he's just not really the type of guy that got them fired up for the room, which I actually find disappointing, guys, because I enjoy Ken Austin as a football mind. Like, talking football with him, for me, doing my job here in Hamilton is always a great joy because he is somebody who will talk X's and O's unlike a lot of other coaches, and he'll dive deep on real true football stuff, and people who enjoy football coverage enjoy guys who are true football men and women. And so I like talking to Kent, but I don't have to play for him, right? That's a completely different thing. And Kent in the room, apparently, based on the report that you saw come out this morning from Three Down Nation and the players that I've talked to, just say that he is an unpleasant person to be able to work with behind the scenes, and that he doesn't give you a lot of, you know, kind of confidence in what you're doing moving forward. I even got a text this morning as I was talking about it on the morning show here in Hamilton from an ex-CFL player who played for him when he was with the Argos, when Kent was the offensive coordinator, and the text just said he was the most unpleasant man I've ever had to work with in a locker room. And so it seems to be a kind of a consensus of that. I'm not a real big fan of slandering somebody when I don't know what's happening in the room, but my job and our job as media people is to be able to report on the consensus that we see around us in order to form opinions. And the consensus that seems to be coming out right now is that people that have been around him in different organizations, not just one, have been kind of unhappy with the surroundings. And I got to say, too, I didn't know what was happening inside that locker room with the Tiger Cats. I don't pretend to. But the first game that June Jones was on the sidelines for the Tiger Cats on Labor Day, and the second game he was on the sidelines for the Tiger Cats on the road at Ottawa in Week 12, that was a dramatically different sideline. It had energy. It had bounce. The players were having fun. They were communicating more. And I knew right away then that something must have been more messed up with Austin on the sidelines than I realized in the first place.
Do you see upcoming here for Winnipeg the receiving core of Walker, Zylstra, Bowman, Williams? Is that just going to be too much for the Bombers to handle?
Man, it's scary, isn't it, Troy? They're a hell of a group, man. And it's an embarrassment of riches right now because my thing at the start of the year with Edmonton, when I actually picked them to win the Grey Cup this year, albeit over Hamilton, so take that with a grain of salt, when I did pick them was because of the multitude of their receivers. And I actually wrote on CFL.ca at the start of the year that they lost Darrell Walker. And so I thought this was the type of year where Mike Riley was going to become the great facilitator, where he was going to be throwing the ball to six, seven, eight different skill position players each game. Each guy might only get three or four catches, but I thought he would spread the ball around better than anybody else in the league. Well, stupid me, he actually ended up getting Darrell Walker back from the National Football League, and when he didn't have Darrell Walker for the first half of the year, he was dominating with really two guys, Brandon Zylstra and being able to have a Darius Bowman there. Now, they did sprinkle in Corey Watson here, Shamad Chambers there before he got traded to Hamilton. They were able to get Brian Mitchell involved in the offensive attack for a little while. We know the troubles they've had at running back, so they've had no choice but to really spread the ball around. But I thought that that was going to be kind of the MO of that Eskimos team at the start of the year, and they've kind of evolved and changed through their hot start to their slow middle part of the season and now getting hot at the back end of the schedule. I don't think they cared about having to play in the West because they just beat Calgary last week, and because they know they can compete with them, and they know that the stands are as hard as they were going to be. And then they look at Winnipeg and going on the road, and I think Edmonton has confidence that they'll have the ability to be able to, A, run the ball, because that's typically what they do in the playoffs, regardless of who the back is, And B, they've just got so many guys that the Bombers secondary has to match up with. If they can run the ball, force Winnipeg to kind of load up the box, all of a sudden you create man-to-man situations. You're not going to be able to cover Darrell Walker in man-to-man or Brandon Zylstra down the seam in man-to-man or Darius Bowman over the middle man-to-man. You're just not going to be able to. They're too good. So I think the key to that game, honestly, next week is whether or not Edmonton can establish any type of run early in the first quarter. If they do that, they'll start to go real heavy play action, and Mike Riley will start taking those seven-step drops at a shotgun and throwing bombs down the field, and that's when it gets really dangerous for Winnipeg.
Only have about 30 seconds, Marshall, but can Toronto come out of the East in your mind? They look dangerous to me.
They do look dangerous. I think they have the ability to. That's going to come down to how much they can involve Anthony Coombs to me coming back off the injury. He's a game-changer for them. Ricky Ray's at his best when he's going play action and flipping the ball out to the flats to Declan Cross or Anthony Coombs or James Wilder Jr., those guys have to be really good for them in the East Final, regardless of whether it's the Riders or the Red Blacks.
Winnipegger Anthony Coombs coming back to the Argos lineup after their bye week. Marshall, we appreciate your time as always. Enjoy your time in Regina and have a good week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Marshall. While you can, during this playoff run, enjoy watching Zylstra for Edmonton and Wilder for Toronto, because they're both going to be gone down south next year.
Really? Both NFL bound?
I think so.
We'll get our next qualifier for our new contest this week, Touchdown O-Town, and also hear from Craig Button on the Duchesne trade. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
780-1290 is TSN 1290 presents, as the man said, Touchdown O-Town, as we're sending two listeners to Ottawa to check out the 105th Grey Cup game at TD Place on Sunday, November the 26th. We'll supply return airfare to and from Ottawa, departing from Winnipeg on Friday, November the 24th. Three nights of accommodations in Ottawa, November 24th to the 26th. Two tickets to both Friday and Saturday night Grey Cup Festival concerts at TD Place, including live performances by Sloan, Ruben in the Dark, and Dwayne Gretzky on Friday, and Trooper and April Wine on Saturday, plus two tickets to Sunday's sold-out Grey Cup game at TD Place. Listen for your chance to qualify this week, Monday to Friday at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. here on The Big Show, on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski at 12:15 p.m., and on the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph at 5:15 p.m., or enter now at tsn1290.ca for a bonus chance to qualify. Winner to be announced next Monday, November the 13th, on The Big Show, Touchdown O-Town, presented by TSN 1290. For more information, simply visit TSN1290.ca. 12th caller through. We had so much fun with our hockey nights in Vegas that we are doing Touchdown O-Town for 1 week and announce the grand prize winner on Monday. If you qualified for hockey nights in Vegas, this is a new contest, so you need to re-qualify. So by all means, TSN1290.ca, and also give us a call and try and be our 12th qualifier through, which today is...
Mel Zaslow.
Zazzy!
Congratulations. You are our second qualifier of the week, as Marie Vanderkeer was our first one. Mel and Marie, you are in for Touchdown in O-Town, and we will continue to qualify throughout the week. TSN1290.ca has all the details, and be listening Monday, Mel and Marie, and everybody else who qualifies to see if they win.
What's next, a trip to the moon? This is ridiculous.
To the moon?
We just... You're giving away stuff left and right.
Just like my jean pockets aren't big enough to hold all these prizes. I'll tell you that.
That's
right
for
now.
Dang sure, those prize pants.
These are tight pants. Got my tight pants on. Got to get rid of all these prizes. Make room in the pockets. Enough about that. What are we doing? Let's talk about the Matt Duchesne trade, and nobody else better to break it down than TSN's very own Craig Button. Here's his thoughts on Duchesne to Ottawa, and Mr. Kyle Turris to Nashville, gets a new contract out of it, and seven assets going to Colorado.
As we continue to talk about the Matt Duchesne to Ottawa deal, we bring in our director of scouting, Craig Button. And Craig, Colorado seemed like they were working on this deal forever. When they finally did they get it right?
I don't think there's any question they got it right. And I think that Joe Sakic, you know, understood what he was trying to do, what the price was for Matt Duchesne, and he didn't waver. And when you consider that a lot of people were saying, oh, he's got to trade him, no, you trade a player when you feel that you're getting what the value for a Matt Duchesne is. And I think that Joe Sakic was not only patient, but he was steadfast in what he was looking for in a return. He gets draft picks, to get some young players that can fit different spots of his team. You look at like Vladislav Kamenev. He was captain of a Russian World Junior team. He's played in the American Hockey League. He's a player that's ready to come in and play in the National Hockey League. Samuel Girard could be a top three defenseman and really produce on the power play. Shane Bowers, the first-round draft pick from last year's draft by the Ottawa Senators, real strong two-way centerman. And then you got all the draft picks. So I think Joe Sakic did a terrific job, not only in being patient, but also in getting things that will help the Colorado Avalanche going forward.
So you like what Joe Sakic did. You like what Colorado gets. I want your instant analysis. Who wins the deal?
Well, you know what? I think that everybody got what they wanted. I just talked about the Colorado Avalanche. So I think for Joe Sakic to really show that, hey, listen, the player doesn't run my team. I'm not just going to trade players just to get them out of here. I'm going to trade them when it makes sense for our team. He did that. David Poile. We're talking about a team that lost in the Stanley Cup final last year. They're center ice now. You know, when you consider you got Ryan Johansson, you got Kyle Turris, you got Nick Bonino, I think they're a stronger team. They haven't taken anybody off their team. Samuel Girard, a really good young defenseman. They have Dante Fabro coming. So that's a case where they drafted well and they could make this trade. And for the Ottawa Senators, they want more speed in the lineup. And that's what Matt Duchene gives them. He also gives them flexibility to play in different spots in the lineup, which every coach would like to have, and Boucher now has that. I think the real key here is going to be Matt Duchene. We saw him start off this season really well, and now going forward, if he can get to that level when he scored 30 goals, well, this is going to be a big win for the Ottawa Senators. But you consider they gave up something in terms of Kyle Turris that you have to look at it and say, okay, contract-wise, they couldn't get to a place where they felt comfortable. So Matt Duchene now becomes a real key piece in this, and if he gets back or even close to that 30-goal level, well, then guess what? The Ottawa Senators are going to feel really good about it, despite having to give up a pretty good swath of picks, prospects, and a good player in Kyle Turris.
So with all this stuff that happened, you know, some people had tarred and feathered Joe Sakic, more or less, you know, then basically thinking he's an idiot, not enough experience for what he's doing, all the rest of it. And now because of this, people are at least going to press the brake pedal on that for a little bit and see how this turns out?
Well, I am. I mean, I'll be honest. I thought he was messing this up, and I thought the longer this went, the worse it was. And let's not forget the environment around Matt Duchene and this team, but they're off to a good start. I give him credit. The longer this went, I thought the less he was going to get. And I guess not. Centers are at a premium, and it makes me wonder anybody else who wants a center, Montreal, any team, what the price is going to be, because I think Joe Sakic getting seven assets. Now, it took another team being involved in order for this to happen, but I give him full credit for this deal.
It's kind of like you've got to, in all these situations, you really got to zip up strong takes in situations like this until ultimately they play themselves out and then they can be measured. And even this is, you know, this is the early measurement. The true understanding of the implications of this trade will be known 3 years down the line, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately that's fair. Unfortunately, we don't live in a, mm-hmm. you know, in a society right now that begs for, I guess, patience and foresight down the road. When I look at this deal, I think Joe Sakic did well for himself, but I love what Nashville did here. Mm-hmm. I really do. And Samuel Girard, he's going to be a heck of a player. And he played a little bit for Nashville this season. And for Colorado to get a blue liner like that, a young guy, is a big get for them. But the Preds were the one team in this trade that got an NHL-ready player to help them now without giving up anything off their roster. Like they improved their one kind of glaring need on their roster. You could argue the Sens did the same thing too, but the Sens shipped out a first-line center for a first-line center. Ottawa or Nashville was able to get a guy that's going to be their second-line guy for a couple of prospects.
We'll talk more NHL and get his thoughts on the deal next when Jonathan Davis joins the Big Show on TSN 1290 from the Royal Sports Studio.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect Four menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station's always free on the iHeartRadio app. Road Sport, Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey on the station tonight at 7:30 is when the puck drops. Live from Dallas with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call. And Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day will set you up for the entire day of Stars and Jets, including here on the Big Show, Kevin Hrushevsky and the Don Vito Roundtable. The afternoon ride from 3 till 6:30 today, an extra half hour for them. And then Hrushevsky and the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show takes over at 6:30. Puck drop at 7:30 between the Jets and the Stars. And then the Huron Windows postgame show, along with the Boss Pizza Fan Line, will be on the air right after the game. The Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open here at 9 a.m. on the Big Show. Lots to get to today in a busy, busy weekend of sports. And to continue the NHL talk, we welcome in from West Coast Hockey our good friend Jonathan Davis. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Doing very well. Very interested when I knew we were having you on Mondays. Get your thoughts on the Matt Duchene to Ottawa, Kyle Turris to Nashville, and seven items going to Colorado for Joe Sakic and the Avalanche.
Well, one thing I learned is that you don't want to play poker with Joe Sakic because he will definitely he will destroy you. And, you know, look, for all this, for the beating that we gave Joe Sakic, many of us in the media did, I think you have to be very impressed with the haul that he came away with. So from Colorado's standpoint, you know, absolutely. You got seven pieces in the deal. I'm sure you guys have kind of gone over it. So, you know, look, I thought he did really well for himself. From Nashville's perspective, I really like Kyle Turris slotting in there, you know, alongside Ryan Johansson. And then even more importantly, you know, it makes the Nick Bonino signing even better because, you know, Bonino came in as the number two, and now he goes back to, you know, when he's healthy to be ultimately the number three where he is best suited. And, you know, and you combine what they have down the middle with what they will have on the back end when Ryan Ellis comes back. And, you know, David Poile has gone all in, no question about it. From Ottawa's perspective, you know, I'm intrigued because, you know, there's been a lot of question about, you know, is Matt Duchene a center? Is his best position center, or is his best position on the wing? And there's no question that Ottawa feels his best position is at center. But, you know, if Kyle Turris signs for 6x6 in Nashville, you know, could they not have afforded that in Ottawa? Unless you take into account that maybe Turris signed for a little less with no state taxes in Nashville.
JD, when you touched on a little bit, can you go even deeper into the David Poile out of left field somehow acquiring Turris? Like, just the way David Poile goes about his business is pretty dang impressive.
Well, Troy, it sure has been of late. There's no question. I mean, you know, you look at the deals that he has made, you know, the Weber for Subban deal, the deal he makes here to get himself Kyle Turris. You know, I don't mind ever surrendering draft picks. You know, I like it in a cap era for that go for it mentality because, you know, you only have such a short window. You know, and the other thing that I do like with this deal and what David Poile has done is that, you know, I think if you take a look, he's got most of his core signed up long term. You know, Turris for 6, Johansson for 8, Subban signed long term, Ellis. You know, he's put this team in a good situation to contend for quite some time. And, you know, this was a guy in David Poile that, you know, his teams always came up short. And I wonder if part of that had to do with just, you know, ownership wasn't all in. And there's no question now that ownership in Nashville is all in. And they don't want to lose the momentum that they built from last season.
How does this change the Central Division? Is this solidify Nashville as maybe the best team on paper and maybe on the ice as well? And how does this change Colorado as we sit here in Winnipeg and wonder about the Central Division and how tough it already is?
Well, yeah, I think that it definitely puts Colorado on paper, you know, as the best team, I think, when healthy. You know, there's no denying what St. Louis has done under Mike Yeo. It's a completely different team they are under Mike Yeo than what they were under Ken Hitchcock. And in the case of Colorado, look, it goes to the rebuilding process that they're trying to complete, and it's going to take some time. There's no question about it. The interesting thing from Colorado is, you know, who's the next chip to move? You know, is it Tyson Berry still? And, you know, now Joe Sakic has kind of set the price for what some of these other players are going to go for. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with a guy like Tyson Berry, who they've been talking about moving for quite some time. And I wonder, though, you know, also, at least for this season, you know, what does it do for Nathan MacKinnon? You know, where is he at right now? And you know, I don't know enough about what's going on inside that room, but, you know, if I'm some of the veteran players, you know, I know that, hey, look, we're still now probably 3-4 years away, and that may be a tough thing for some of the guys to handle in Colorado that have been there for quite some time.
JD, how serious and deep-seated are the concerns with the Oilers?
Well, I think that they have to be, you know, deep. I think that, you know, look, you look at that roster right now, and you know, they'll point, you know, many will point to the fact that they're missing Andre Sekera and what that's done to the back end. It's a very fragile group right now. They've got a coach that I think, you know, at least externally, and Todd McClellan, who handles things as well as anybody in, you know, any other coach in the league would. But yeah, I think, you know, you have to be concerned that there's been such a lack of production on the right side. I think they've only got 2 goals from a right winger, technically, and those both come from Leon Draisaitl. And, you know, he's really, you know, ideally a center. So, you know, look, Milan Lucic has not worked out in Edmonton. And I think that, you know, many of us thought that this was just a bad deal from the start. But, you know, look, they're at a situation right now, they're 8 points out. And, you know, November 1st for many is really the date, not Thanksgiving, that if you're 4 or more out on November 1st, you're done. I mean, only 6 of 48 have made it since 2005, 2006, when you don't count the lockout season. So, yeah, I think the concerns have to be really big because there's a lot of ground to make up. Now, you know, so I don't know what you do. They, you know, watching them play yesterday against Detroit, it just looked like a very uninspired top line with Draisaitl, McDavid, and Maroon. And Tom McClellan let them know, and I think they only had 2 shifts in the third period. McDavid played 14 minutes, and I know you're going to have games like that, but I just thought after the way they played Friday against New Jersey, I was expecting a far better performance against really a Detroit team that is really very average.
Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey joining us on the Big Show this morning from the Royal Sports Studio, TSN 1290. It is 41 minutes past the hour on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars tonight on the station at 7:30. Jonathan, along those lines, about 2 weeks to American Thanksgiving, what surprises you more? The Los Angeles Kings, second in the West with 22 points, the Vegas Golden Knights, third with 18 points, or Vancouver in a playoff spot right now with 2 weeks to American Thanksgiving with 16 points? Or is all of that surprising?
Well, I would say it's all is surprising. I mean, I think, you know, when you watch Vancouver play, you know, especially Saturday night against the Pittsburgh team that, you know, talk about, you know, Edmonton being, you know, a bit of a dumpster fire right now. I mean, look, Pittsburgh was 1-5 on that road trip. And to see how Vancouver won that game with the Besser line, you know, scoring all 4 goals, but 3 of them came with Sidney Crosby's line on the ice. All 4 came with Chris Letang on the ice. You know, this Vancouver Canucks team definitely, you know, seems for real, and you have to really respect the way they're playing. And they're getting great goaltending from Markstrom. You know, he's starting to, it looks like, to turn that corner and to be the goalie that the Florida Panthers thought when they had drafted him. And the Sedins, you know, look, that night, I think, played 8 and 9 minutes respectively, or both under 9 minutes, so there's definitely a changing of the guard in Vancouver. When you look to Vegas, you know, I look at this road trip, and despite the fact that, guys, they finished 1-3, they really could have been a lot better. And, you know, maybe it goes to the saying that, you know, I thought that they would be good enough to just play good enough to lose on many nights. And that's kind of the way they played on that road trip, because they led their opening night game in the Island. They were up, you know, going to the third period against the Rangers. They were tied going to the third period against Boston, and they lost all three of those games before winning in Ottawa and got themselves a bit of a scare, you know, when Carlson scored with 30 seconds left, and then they almost tied it, you know, with 7 seconds to go. So, yeah, they continue to play hard every night, and that's just a credit to the coach. And when you look in Los Angeles, again, you know, that comeback that they had, and, you know, you never like to be down 3-0 in your own barn on, you know, at any time, but to see the way that that team responded and continued to push the pace and still come up short in a 4-3 loss, you know, to Nashville in overtime, the type of game that they continue to play is something that we just haven't seen in quite some time. And again, I think for me the biggest thing is just seeing the smiles and the excitement on their face. It is definitely a totally different situation in Los Angeles. But to rank surprises, Vancouver definitely has to be one. I'll go with Vegas, two, and L.A. three, only because there's far more talent, I think, in L.A. than there is in both Vegas and Vancouver.
J.D., the vast majority, like 98% of fans of hockey, just can't possibly wrap their mind around the difficulty of playing every second, third night, more or less, as these 82-game seasons unfurl, and I'm myself included in that. I can't imagine how draining it is, and especially when we're all watching these games, expecting these guys basically to be robots night in, night out. That just coming to a somewhat of an understanding of that sure makes you look at Cogliano with the Ducks and its 800 consecutive games. What a great achievement that is.
Yeah, it sure is. And you know, look, there are times, you know, I look back at Cal Ripken's streak in baseball, and I think that there were times that you felt that Cal should just sit out, that he just didn't have it. And, you know, I just don't see that with Andrew Cogliano. I mean, the condition that he keeps him in, you know, his physical conditioning is off the charts. And, you know, it's a guy that, you know, look, he doesn't put himself in a position, you know, his type of game is not a very physical game by any stretch. So that definitely takes away from some of the wear and tear on the body. But, you know, man, to be effective as he is 800 consecutive games, it's a true testament to the type of athlete he is. And, you know, wow, it'll still take him one. I think he'll pass Doug Jarvis in maybe 2 or 3 years if he can keep it going. But, you know, if you've ever had a chance to meet Andrew Cogliano, and for me, when you go into that Ducks locker room, and even after a loss, you know that you're always going to get an honest quote from Andrew Cogliano.
Great stuff, Jonathan, as always. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy your week.
You as well, boys. Talk to you next Monday.
Thanks so much, J.D. Take care, man. Are you guys, the two of you, J.D. and Wicks, aware that you're sitting amongst an Iron Man? Yeah, you're with in the presence of an Iron Man?
Is there someone else in the studio not aware of?
Who's hiding? Where?
The two greatest Iron Men in CFL freaking history, the football players of Bob Cameron, number one, and myself, Westwood, number two,
is
in
Bob
CFL
here?
History.
Is Bob here?
I'm just saying.
Bob's a great guy.
Two football players.
Are the Iron Men of the CFL?
Yeah.
Well, what else would be of the CFL? Of course it's football players.
It'll put, well, I'm a punter and a kicker is kind of having fun.
Would you say there's more longevity at the kicking positions than any other in the CFL?
Why? Just because back in the day when it was like Canadians and Canadians only, how dare you, Jay?
I'm just asking.
What are you saying?
One's a Heck Crichton Trophy winner.
You know what that is. Yeah. Cameron told me, our first training camp, he stretched in front of me. He said, I won the Heck Crichton Award, you know. I looked at him and said, what's that? I don't know what that is. He goes, are you freaking serious? I'm like, yeah, sorry, man. I don't know. What is it?
He said he wanted to be a quarterback. He won the Heck Crichton Trophy as a quarterback. And I was like, really? And he said, what does that mean? Really? I'm like, well, I just know he has a punter.
He was good, man.
Yes, he was good. He's a good athlete all around. His story of getting into the CFL is unbelievable.
Oh,
when you think of the career he's had and how he, I think, went to Edmonton, got cut,
yep,
couldn't get a job. Mm-hmm. And then when he did finally get one, it turned out to be one of the greatest ones ever.
Yeah, 23 years.
All right, back on track here as we have Road Sport Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey on the station,
yeah, whatever,
tonight at 7:30.
Sleep at night there.
Lots to get to. Jets and Canadians. The Bombers get a big win in Calgary and solidify a home playoff date. NFL Week 9. GSP is a title winner holder again, anything and everything as we tee up the Boss Pizza fan line coming up next on the Big Show on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day here from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. Tonight at 7:30, the puck drops. Paul Evans, Brian Munns has the call as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey, Jets and Stars. Lots to get to today on the Boss Pizza fan line with Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. 780-1290, top of the hour. We'll take your calls. You can also text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. We'll start with the Jets losing in overtime to the Montreal Canadiens. Heavily outplayed in the game, and they did have a 4-2 lead in the third. They get to overtime to get a point. Is that a point won or a point lost in your mind on Saturday night?
That's such a neat question, man, because when you're talking about, yeah, they're up by two, but they also, like, from shots directed towards net in the first 29-11, and the second 27-11, like, dang near pretty much 3-1, and then under siege what was the most overwhelming was the last 5 minutes of that third period. But the fact is they were up by two with 10-ish minutes left in that third period, right? So they never should have been up by two in all reality. They didn't deserve to be, but they were. So I guess you have to be somewhat disappointed that they weren't able to hang on to that. But I think when you take a step back, look at the totality of the game, and for them to have an off game after 5-6 pretty solid games, to me, that's acceptable. And to escape such an evening with a point, yeah, I think that's fine and dandy.
I think it could be fine and dandy what happened there, as long as, you know, the next three games look like the last three games,
agreed,
sort of thing, right? Yeah. Like, just if it's a blip, then it's a blip, and you move forward and you get the point. And they, to be honest, they were fortunate. Like, I know they had the 4-2 lead, and you'd like to close things out, but they were fortunate to not be down 4-2 at that point and having to chase the game and get it into OT. So they played their best game of the season, I thought, against Dallas last week. They need to do that again tonight. And it'll be interesting to see how the penalty kill does, because didn't get a chance to see them against the Stars' number one ranked unit. But Montreal kind of made mincemeat out of them Saturday night. And I think the Jets, who were kind of in the middle of the pack a few games ago, have now dropped kind of back to where they've been the majority of this season. And that's hovering close around the bottom five in the NHL.
Given the fashion in which they played, I think it's a point one. I know they had a 4-2 lead, but they were lucky to hang on and get that point. We'll see what they can get done tonight in Dallas. And that leads us to our next question. What do you expect against the Stars, their second game in three against their Central Division rival?
I'll sum it up in one word for me. I expect feisty. I think it's going to be right out of the gate. What we witnessed just a few days ago was all kinds of fun in watching it play on Thursday there. And I expect something along the lines similar to that. These two teams, there just seems to be something there a little bit, right? And you got Hitchcock's a little bit snarly at any time, probably the prettiest sunset he's looking out at, and he's got a snarly sort of attitude. Paul Maurice will be nice and snarly. This will be fun. I think it's going to be a beauty tonight.
I think Dallas is the, I don't want to say dirtiest isn't fair, but the chippiest, feistiest team I think the Jets have played this year. I was totally blown away by how physical they were in that game. And the Jets didn't really back down either. But to me, it's going to be, I don't even know if you have to look at the penalty kill being strong. If the Jets can be disciplined like they were against Dallas Thursday, that's probably their best recipe for avoiding a couple freebies on the man advantage here, because I don't know if the Jets right now, with the way their PK is going, if they're going to be able to slow down Dallas.
I thought you were going to predict a Helly Bishop tilt.
Oh, those are some big tendies too.
Manute Bolin, well, not Refrigerator Perry, but nonetheless. Bombers going to Calgary, 23-5, big road win to wrap up the regular season, solidify a home playoff date, which will be this Sunday, 3:30 against the Eskimos.
Crazy. Just crazy.
We'll leave it at that. Do you think it was crazy?
7 turnovers.
Do you think it was crazy?
Beautiful.
How do you lock up that win, or how do you view that win for the Bombers in order to get a home playoff date? NFL Week 9, GSP wins, anything and everything coming up on The Big Show. Your thoughts, text 1290-90, standard message rates applying, or give us a call at 780-1290. We'll take your calls from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 is wide open on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Full coverage throughout the day today as Winnipeg Jets embark on a three-game road trip, 3 till 6:30 the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph. Kevin O has the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show from 6:30 till 7:30, and then we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey as they take on the Dallas Stars with live puck drop at 7:30 here on TSN 1290 and the Huron Windows postgame show. We'll wrap it all up for you. What are your impressions of the Jets 5-4 overtime loss to the Montreal Canadiens on Saturday night, and what do you expect tonight against the Stars? The Winnipeg Blue Bombers Friday night went into Calgary and beat the Calgary Stampeders 23-5 to earn a home playoff date and finish the regular season 12-6. Your thoughts on the regular season, their 12-6 record, and the fact that they beat Calgary to solidify a home playoff date this Sunday at IGF. NFL Week 9, lots going on. Fight night. Fight night GSP wins a title 4 years away from the octagon, and plenty of fist fights, literally, in the National Football League as well. And if we don't get any calls, Mr. Westwood would like to talk about his Ironman streak some more in the Canadian Football League.
I did say I would like to. I offered it up to you as a possible talking point.
So let's get to the phone calls at 780-1290. Maybe Bob Cameron will call in, and we'll discuss the whole Ironman streak. Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Who's up first?
Let's go to the Netherlands. It's our buddy Rowdy.
Rowdy, how are you, sir? Hello?
Hello, still there?
Yes, we got you on. Congratulations for joining us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. I just wanted to make 2 points today. First one is the slightly bigger one than the other one. It's about the tweet you guys took earlier in the show that said that if the Jets don't get 6 points out of these next 4 games, that Maurice should get fired. Well, I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I can't say I'm that comfortable with the coaching staff at this moment. I mean, when you look at it from a Corsi perspective, the Jets are dead last in Corsi, and basically the only metric that is looking positively right now is the expected goals against, which is kind of inflated because of the play by Hellebuck. And it's really worrisome to me. While I think it will get better once Perreault and Lowry get back, and I think Maurice will get let the leash go a bit as the season moves on, just to make sure that the defensive structure is in play. I don't know. I'm worried about it, and I wanted to know what you guys think of it.
Well, that's another question we are bringing up today, too, because we started the show with that, and I thought if you look at the possession numbers, the analytics of the game against Montreal, they are the Jets were owned in that game. That's why I was surprised that they actually got a point out of it. But overall,
that's what the Habs do.
Yeah.
And they're third in the league.
And that's why, and they also, I think, them and Edmonton, I think, lead the Edmonton's NHL with right shots there, yeah. on goal. And from what I saw going into Saturday, the three teams with the best possession numbers are Edmonton, Buffalo, and Montreal.
Carolina, Edmonton, Montreal.
And so that's where it sits today. But great question, because that's the other thing we wanted to ask at 7-3-3. Does the possession numbers get better? Is this sustainable, what the Winnipeg Jets are doing? And the fashion in which they're doing it.
Well, their PDO is pretty remarkable. So that's their save percentage going on with their shooting percentage, right? And that can be sustainable. You can pull that off for a season. Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup last year with the worst Corsi numbers in the playoffs by quite a ways. So, theoretically, Should you be able to go 82 games as the 31st ranked team in Corsi and have a strong team or slide into the playoffs? In theory, probably not. But can you buck things like that and sort of wrestle your way by? Yeah, it's possible, but it's something the Jets would ultimately like to get a little bit stronger at. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's you could do it, but is it the most sound strategy? Obviously not, right? And it's not. I mean, it's not even an analytical thing, right? Do you just look at it from its most basic point? Mm-hmm. Do you want your team getting heavily outshot every single night? No, like it's a very simple concept. To like people, you hear the word analytics, and a lot of people just kind of bristle. But the fact of the matter is, teams that get outshot all the time generally find ways to lose, and it's. Yeah, I mean, it's great the goaltending's playing outstanding, but how long can you expect that to last? And then your margin of error is extremely slim at that point because you're basically, you know, hoping that your elite skill will convert on the few chances that you do get every night. And it's just, it can't work out. It rarely does in the end. And they do. They have to get a lot better at I mean, the special teams is an issue, right? But how much of the game is played 5-on-5? 90% of it? And if the Jets aren't any good at that, might not matter what the special teams does.
Yeah, for me, Roddy, it is a concern. Like, it's I'm not overplaying it. I'm not underplaying it right now. And as they sit with 13 games played, it's a concern going forward for sure. They're 7-3-3. I think they're off to a great start. They have 17 points. But I would look at these numbers and be concerned about it and look for them to improve on it as the season unfolds here.
But, you know, I'll go a little bit further. But in looking at the Jets' schedule and what they did over the last handful of games here, when you look at as they played against Dallas and then prior to that, the Minnesota game, the couple of Pittsburgh games and Columbus games, those were very impressive. You know, those, I know the Jets have struggled right out of the gate. Their Corsi numbers, possession numbers weren't very good. But what they put together, like definitely a team trending in the right direction.
Thanks for the call, Roddy. Back to the Boss. Hope everything's great in the Netherlands. Thanks for taking the time. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Wayne.
Wayne, you're on the program. Go ahead, Wayne.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just going to go on a little bit of a rant here about our Jets. I'm really sick of our coaching staff and their imbecile decisions, i.e. our penalty kill, our power play, and our overtime, the three guys they put on the ice in overtime, which kind of is specific more to our defense. Who is our best, most consistent all-around defenseman this year, you guys?
You know what?
Might be Josh Morrissey.
It might be Morrissey. It might be Myers.
Without a doubt, it's Morrissey.
It's not Myers. Yeah.
Why isn't Morrissey out there on 3-on-3? I've yet to see him out there, actually, in all of our overtime games. Is that agreed? Have you guys seen him out there?
I think I have, yes.
I can't recall seeing him out there.
We have to double-check that.
Yeah.
But
I'll tell
you, to be fair,
it's not a lot.
They've also ended pretty quickly, so you don't get much of a chance to see anyone out there.
Yeah, but you know who is starting? It's Buff.
And
you know,
they've ended quickly.
He's our slowest defenseman, and on 3-on-3, you can't have our slowest guy out there. And then you've got Enstrom out there. I think Poolman is the guy to be out there instead of Enstrom. Buff is frustrating me. He's just getting too much ice time late in games. He looks fatigued out there, and I think that's on Huddy. Did anybody notice in the last 2 minutes when Buff iced the puck? They had an ice to one Wheeler, and he mouthed F and Buck, or F Buck, F Buff. Did you guys notice that? So I think the captain is even getting frustrated with the play of Buff. I think Huddy is intimidated by Buff with the amount of time he plays him and his glaring defensive miscues, and yet we're seeing less and less of guys that should be out there. Having Ehlers not carry up the puck on the first power play is a joke. Troy attests to that. Hundreds of thousands of Jets fans know that, and yet our coaching staff doesn't notice that. Letting teams just walk into our zone on the PK is also a joke. Does Maurice not watch other teams' successful power play kills? And, you know, it's very frustrating. Having team players like Weber, Suter, Letang just teeing up the puck at the top of the circle is just a recipe for disaster. Now that Lowry is healthy, the odd man out has to be the slow, non-offensive, average faceoff man in Hendricks. You can't move the quick and best faceoff guy in Kopp to the wing. Just makes no sense. Send him to the Moose to help mentor the young guys. No team is going to be picking up Hendricks on waivers. Just your thoughts, guys.
I totally agree with what you said about Hendricks and the return of Lowry and not moving Kopp anywhere.
I'll start with saying that Dustin Byfuglien's 3-on-3 numbers are not only very good for the Jets, but he's one of the best throughout his career in the National Hockey League. I know that there's a lot of fever around the Columbus game and this one against Montreal, but for the constant questions about why he's out there, that's probably why he's out there.
He looked gassed in both of those games, though, like dunzo.
Yeah,
they can't be effective if you're that tired. The 3-on-3 especially.
The penalty kill for the Jets has dropped out of 15th, given that they gave up 3 power play goals to the Montreal Canadiens, down to 26. But going into that game, they were 15th. The power play right now for the Jets is 7th in the league.
The penalty kill, I talked and voiced my opinion on it last week, where, hey, man, it's great. They were on that wicked run where they were like 6th in the NHL from some time frame and had killed 11 of their last 12 or something like that. But I'm right there with everyone else calling in saying, like, the way, the structure of that penalty kill, I just don't see long-term success attached to it, man. It was great they were getting away with it, but I just, with how passive it is and how deep they collapse and how easy zone entry is on, and I said in that one game against Columbus, they were literally twice where the Jets, the four guys, were turned and skating into their zone, allowing no obstruction whatsoever or trouble at the blue line. They were just getting deep and settled in their own zone. I can't stand the penalty kill.
And I would say, what do you think they would be more closely resembling, the 15th-ranked PK or the 26th-ranked PK?
Yep.
And I would say towards the you just can't allow that much time and space to teams in the NHL. The players are just too talented, too skilled right now, and to pray that you can kind of block every single shot that comes your way and focus on clearing afterwards, I think is a strategy it's just destined for failure. And it would. Does anybody think that can work against Dallas tonight?
And it actually creates an insane, you saw on the Shaw tip, an insane amount of traffic in front of the goalie. So if the save's made, then maybe you can pounce on the rebound quickly, but you just inherently create that much more traffic and screen in front of the goalie on top of it.
I'm just looking up the Dallas game here from last Thursday, and as I get to that,
they beat Dallas in that special.
They didn't take a penalty against Dallas. That was the game they didn't take a penalty.
You got Dallas number one power play, number two penalty kill, and the Jets pull off a special teams win that night. That's crazy, or it's fantastic. Let's see if they can duplicate it again tonight.
Thanks for the call, Wayne. We appreciate that. And your questions and opinions on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on The Big Show. Whom is next?
Oh, we should probably break.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we'll get to more of your calls when we come back. 780-1290. You can also text your thoughts to 1290-90 as we bring you Road Sport, rather, Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets Hockey tonight at 7:30, Jets and Stars from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show in Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets start a 3-game road trip in Dallas tonight to take on the Stars as TSN 1290 brings you Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets Hockey. This is the Big Show. Jim, Troy, and Brandon from the Royal Sports Studio and the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Steve, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Steve. Steve? I hear you there, Steve. Can you hear us?
He's gone.
Okay. Try again, Steve. Great time to talk about the CFL Ironman. Time. But before we get to that and just beg for phone calls so
great
we don't
teaser.
Have to, Let's get into, as well as tonight's Jets game with the Stars and the three-game road trip, but also the Bombers and their win in Calgary. We teed it up a little bit before we got to the Boss Pizza fan line at 780-1290, but also at the beginning of the show. How big of a win is this? How surprised, shocked, given the conditions, backup quarterbacks, everything, that they went in and won 23-5 to solidify a home playoff date?
Well, it was just the way the... Like, how many games was it that the Bombers needed to win to secure the home playoff game, right? And then earlier in the week, you hear Matt Nichols is out, or for Matt Nichols to be out, and you're like, oh, boy, right? And Andrew Harris takes a heck of a shot, and he seems unlikely, and there's backup guys on the old line, and you're going into Calgary, and it doesn't matter. You could put a duck behind center, for Pete's sake, and with Calgary's defense, you're probably still going to go with Calgary to win the game. And then, you know, we were talking. Then Bo Levi's out. I said, whoa. Okay, well, there's one of the miracles you need. And then the snowfall and the insanity of that. It's like, well, that's another thing that helps an underdog. And then we were talking all last week. You get a bunch of turnovers, man. That can change any sort of situation. We talked about the playoff game before. And it all unfolded. And at halftime, it's 23-0 with this tsunami of turnovers coming out of Calgary. And it was just, it was incredible. It was a thing of beauty. And the Bombers get the home game. The organization gets the $3+ million of the home game. And Bomber fans get to be happy. And it's just remarkable. So, hey, it all came together. And what it creates to me, what's most fascinating about it is now Calgary. What is Calgary right now? Like, where are they at exactly? And yeah, that game you can maybe brush aside, but you can't brush aside all those turnovers and the level of struggle that they had, and compound that with the two losses before that. Like, they can't be feeling super solid, and they got a week that they're off that much more, and it's just, there's a question mark in Calgary, and now if Winnipeg can, you know, you get back Nichols, and you get back, you got Flanders and Harris ready to go, and maybe you get one or two guys back on that O-line. And if the defense can have itself a bit of a game, and and it's a cold, nasty day here in Winnipeg, and so there's two cold, nasty wins in a row, and you can pop by Edmonton, and you were just in Calgary and took it to them. There's, like, is that a little bit of some things rolling together that gives you some level of momentum and a little bit of sass going into Calgary? I love the way it sets up. For either Edmonton or Winnipeg, I like the way it sets up for going back to Calgary and a team that, as much as the Stamps can be reeling, they're reeling right now.
Yeah, and what I like the most from that game, I thought at least from the Bombers' side, is that, you know, maybe this is a team that translates well to colder temperatures and November football and that sort of thing, because the Bombers, look, Calgary's defense was playing the majority of their starters, right? Like, Alex Singleton
was out
there. Only
two guys were out, yeah.
So it wasn't like you were going up against Calgary's B team. And the Bombers ran the football, not at will, but they ran it very, very successfully. And Timothy Flanders, at the end of the game, kind of helped to close things out. But if the Bombers can run the ball real well against Edmonton and control the clock and just kind of take away the amount of opportunities Edmonton's offense can have in
the
game.
Field, yeah.
That's, like, I don't think a win is that hard to imagine for the Bombers if they follow kind of a similar game plan. Plus, you know, we know Edmonton's offense is predicated on the long ball, right? Like, throwing those high 50-50 balls out there, and if the temperature's colder and the ball doesn't travel as well, like, I just kind of wonder if, when you look at both of these offenses, which is better suited for cold temps, possibly snow, slick surfaces, and I think I'd have to give the edge to the Bombers right now. Unfortunately, Edmonton's got a big edge defensively with what they bring to the table.
Not only that, but the O-line for the Stamps had all their starters in, and they didn't do very well either. They got owned by the Bombers' defensive line. And to your point, the sign that everybody was talking about on the TSN broadcast of in the whiteboard in the room on the way out for the Bombers, it said, weather perfect, temp not cold enough, wind we don't care.
That was awesome. And when that team that the Bombers had in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, that all the old-timers remember, and the team that I joined in 91 and up to the mid-'90s, they're really upon the departure of Cal Murphy, That team loved cold, snarly, nasty weather, man. Like, loved it. And you're talking about guys like Jones, West, Battle, you know, guys that were Americans and from warm climate. But because they had some level and decent level of success in the cold, you end up embracing that and sort of linking it to success and what you are. And, you know, that becomes part of Winnipeg for the guys that aren't from here, right? So I know it's a baby step. But going into Calgary and winning that game in real ugly cold weather and pulling off a win at home here in November where you're going to have likely similar type of conditions, that just sort of – and you have the ferocity of a guy like Andrew Harris, a prairie boy who sort of helps to bring that into the team element anyway. I love that connection. And Mike O'Shea, of course, leading the charge cut from the granite of the Canadian Shield himself, going, you know, flipping the bird to the weather, and the uglier the better. I love that whole thing, the way it's brewing.
And I love the analysis from Matt Dunnigan, I believe, on the broadcast, or somebody, maybe it was Milt or whoever, but it literally said that you have to own it. Like, you have to come out in your T-shirt or whatever for warm-up and embrace it and say,
like,
mentally get over the fact that it's cold. It's not cold enough, and it looked like the Bombers literally did that, and the Stamps didn't.
And it's really, JT, it's really like anything that be considered adversity in the game of sport. Like, just a little cute little link. This past weekend, our U9 team in soccer played at 8 in the morning. So the kids are going to be sluggish and all the rest of it. If you can convince that group, are you guys tired? They say, yes, you know, you're not tired. You let your opponents be tired. And this very similar thing with the weather. When you come out and if you can embrace that, and it's almost like a cloak that you put on and you go, we love this, right? We're out here in short sleeves. We love this. And we're going to rip your face off and watch you freeze to death as you guys huddle by your warmers. And that's a great sign.
And we love your calls.
Whichever team is
on the Boston Pizza fan line.
Standing by the warmers. 780-1290.
Next on the Big Show. Sorry, we got a break, but great point. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets Hockey on TSN 1290 tonight at 7:30. The puck drops with Paul Edmonds and Mr. Brian Munns. And, of course, we will set it up for you throughout the day today on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The afternoon ride, 3 till 6:30. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show, 6:30 till 7:30. Puck drop between the Jets and the Stars at 7:30. And then the Huron Windows postgame show. We'll wrap it up for you, including the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, which is open right now to take your calls with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. How are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, listen, I wish people would get off Buff's case. That's ridiculous. I think the problem right now, I like little Lanny and Ehlers on the same line on paper, but they don't seem to have much chemistry for some reason. I think one of those guys has to go down to the third line and throw some scoring punch on that third line. Other than that, I'm pretty happy with the team. I'm sorry the way they played on Saturday. It seems like Montreal, they just throw in the towel for some reason. I have no idea why. But other than that, I think the team's pretty good shape.
Thanks for the call, Rick. That's something we talked about last week, and when talking about the little Ehlers line A line, I tend to agree that they're not firing like they should be, and I also think that maybe busting that line up has a little bit to do with just how well the Shifley, Wheeler, Connor line is doing. Like, I think if they were both sort of at the same level, then you could very easily switch and move some things around. But I think one of the things that holds head coach Paul Maurice off is just how well Shifley, Wheeler, Connor are clicking. The idea of putting somebody on the third line, I don't know about that. I mean, I think that things change if Adam Lowry comes back in the lineup, and I think things definitely change with Kyle Connor on the roster when
with
Matthew
Perreault
coming back.
Yeah.
So I
could see like the Shifley, Ehlers, line A, Connor, Little, Wheeler. I don't know if that is the answer. I thought out of the gate that's what the lines should and could maybe be. But you're getting such tremendous production from from Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler that I suppose you would be a little bit tentative to do much with that. But it's a bit of a conundrum, right? There's not, although there was a lot of depth thought maybe coming into the season, ultimately there's not a lot of scoring depth. Although even, would you agree that Tanev, Kopp, Mathias, like they're starting to wake up? I feel like the last few games, the bottom six to some degree, or maybe it's just simply now with Tanev, Kopp, and Mathias, is starting to wake up to some degree.
You know, and to my point, I know the fever around Brandon Tanev. I get that. But I sort of said at the start of the year, he was a rookie last year. I'm interested to see where he can go. He had another beautiful goal against Dallas that just for goaltender interference wasn't allowed, which I still don't think he was that interfered with. But that's just a great hockey play, whether it counted or not.
He's looked, I'm right there with you, man. Like, he had a couple of great plays. The feed to Kopp was tremendous. He had another caused a takeaway or turnover by the Habs and screamed up the right side, had the possibility to slide it over to, I think it was Mathias who's with, but decided to shoot and was a nice scoring opportunity. I've been really impressed with him, man.
He's just coming along. Like, I'm not saying he's great or anything, but he's the more he plays, the more he's coming along. So, and Mathias, again, I'm totally on board with everybody, and he's got to finish and produce more. But I also think that he's getting those chances, and like Armia's not, and when Dano's in the lineup, not. So I understand why he's giving them a little bit of leeway here, but I just wait for when Perreault and Lowry are back and see how it all fits in, especially with Kyle Connor on the roster, and see what this team can do then. Until then, they're 7-3-3, they're winning, but let's talk about that a little bit, guys. On Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Stars tonight, the Brian Little, Nick Ehlers, Patrick Laine line. I think, you know, we see brilliance from Ehlers. We see what Laine can do. It hasn't been consistent through the first 13 games. But Brian Little has hit a couple posts. He's had his chances. But you definitely need to get more than one goal out of Brian Little as well. Like, the chemistry on that line, is it – where do you see it at? Because when Perreault and Lowry do come back in – I mean, Lowry could come back tonight. Perreault in another week or so, it's like, where do you fit it? Do you leave it? Do you let it go? Do you keep going with it? Or do you maybe move some pieces around?
The most prone move that I would be to make would to go with Ehler, Scheifele, and Laine, and to have Connor, Little, and Wheeler. I think Perreault, and no question about it, Perreault on your third line, and once Lowry is back, like there's that, having Perreault back is going to be such a huge shot in the arm from a production standpoint, and actually giving you a legitimate top nine here. The key is, how long is he going to be healthy for? Right, like you're worried every time you see him out on the ice at this point in time to please not get injured. So hopefully he can go on a real solid roll maybe the rest of the season and stay healthy. Certainly they absolutely need him out there.
Yeah, I think at this point you have to look at swapping the wingers in the top six and looking for some kind of a change here. And to be fair, we don't really talk about him a lot, but I haven't really noticed Brian Little a whole lot this season. Mm-hmm. Not that he's been bad necessarily, but just nothing that really jumps out at you. Like, I don't know if it's missing a step from last year, but there's just something not quite right with his game right now. And especially, I mean, when you're playing with Ehlers and Laine, you know, and him being on basically a half a point a game pace, that's just not good enough. You need more. You need more from Brian Little. I think it's just really that simple, and he's been a little underwhelming this year.
6 points in 13 games, one goal. As I just said, I think you need more goals from Brian Little. I know he's hit the post about, I think I remember counting 2 to 3 times. But I do, that being said, I don't have anything wrong with his game. You need to get more from him. I think he can give you more is what I'm saying, given the player that we've seen him be.
He's been great at the dot. He's like 58% at the dot.
Yeah, outstanding at the dot. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
No, we're having some trouble with our phone, by the way. So,
okay, so
if anyone's trying to call in, just be patient and we'll try and fix this shortly.
We'll get to your calls, and then also you can text us your thoughts and impressions at 1290-90 with standard
message
rates.
That might be something to do, discuss text that we're getting, right?
Yeah, let's go to the text. Start with the ones that love us. 1290-90 is where you can send your text to as well, as we bring you Road Sport, Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey tonight, Jets and Stars. The beginning of a 3-game road trip. We started the show with this as well. Some people were weighing in on Twitter, also at Jim Toe Sports, at Troy Westwood, and at Brandon_Rewicki about our discussion of what you expect from this team tonight. And I said 4 out of 6 would be pretty good. In my mind, anything more would be great. Anything less is probably a little bit of a step back. The key game to me is tonight against Dallas, given what we saw two games ago and being a Central Division rival. Vegas is going to be tough, too, and I understand Arizona's struggling. It's a home game and it's back-to-back, but you've got to get 2 points out of that game. I think if they can get 4 of 6 before they head back home, that's a pretty good road trip.
And to me, that would just be passable because you've got because of the way, you know, who your opponents are. Tonight's going to be a tough one for sure. And then with Vegas and Arizona, that's as close as you get there. In it should be to, you know, if you're going to be a playoff contending team, you've got to take advantage of those situations. I know Vegas have been on a wicked hot streak and all the rest of it, but I'm not sure who they have in net for them. Ashton Litske, who's their goalie now? I'm not quite sure, but they're on their fifth or sixth kind of goalie.
I don't even want to say because it could be different by Friday.
And then Arizona, you got to make noise. So to me, 5 points. We're talking this. 5 points will be a successful next three games here. 4 would be just barely passable. But go make some hay. Go have some fun tonight. Tonight's going to be a super intense, fun game. The big part of the Jets winning that game on Thursday 5-2 was taking down arguably the best special teams in the league, first on the power play and second on the penalty kill in the Dallas Stars. But the Jets won that without taking a penalty, and they ended up winning that battle. So that component of the game tonight, can the Jets go up against the Stars and beat them from a special point team standpoint? Can that actually transpire again?
Matt Duchene did address the media in Ottawa with his new team. He will wear number 95 for the Senators, and he is taking part in his first practice. We'll get your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line at 780-1290 as well on that trade that sees Matt Duchene finally leave the Avalanche, go to Ottawa, and have Kyle Turris go to Nashville, gets a 6-year, $36 million deal, and 7 assets going back to the Colorado Avalanche in that 3-way trade. Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Let's go to Derek.
Derek, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
So, Lowry's in tonight. I'm assuming Hendricks is out.
Well, we haven't confirmed that yet. They'll take the morning skate, and probably we'll know for sure once Kevin Olszewski and the Don Vito roundtable hits the air at 11. But that's the assumption that Adam Lowry, if he's not back tonight, it'll be probably Friday.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the easiest switch there without disrupting it. Because, you know, like Kopp and Tanev and Matthias, they got some chemistry brewing there. And another thing, you guys remember when Ladd was about to get traded there, they put him on a line with Lowry and Armia, and that worked out pretty well. And I'd like to see what Lemieux and Lowry and Armia could do, because, you know, Lemieux's kind of like Lad light, but way more spunk in his game. Anyways, hope we get a win tonight. Go, just go.
Take care, man. With Perreault available, though, I assume when you're saying Lemieux, Lowry, Armia, you're
like now.
Yeah, like without Perreault available, I'm assuming you're mean, right?
Yeah.
But that would be a nice fourth line: Lemieux, Lowry, Armia. Although Armia, I really hope when Perreault comes back that Armia gets a chance on the right side of that line.
And then you could go cop Matthias Tanev on the fourth line.
That'd be a great fourth line. Those guys are clicking along pretty good.
I don't know if you want to break that trio up right now.
Everyone's expectations. As far as I don't know any Jets fans that were expecting the level of play from the cop line as what we've seen.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line. Thanks for the call, Derek. 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290 from the Royal Sports Studio. Whom is next?
Ron.
Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
So I don't know how much you guys have talked about it this morning, and I guess realistically we probably shouldn't have even gotten a point out of that game against Montreal. By the way, we were playing, got outshot, the whole bit. And we were lucky to get to overtime, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about the egregious, that interception. Interference.
Yeah.
Thank you.
On Pacioretty.
On Bufflin.
Yeah.
And like that was absolutely ridiculous. That should have been called, regardless of how we played that game and the whole bit, and not deserving to win, and if we would have won, and lucky to if we would have won it. But I just, when I saw that, and I'm thinking, Well, the referee was standing right there, and I don't get it. Like, that was a total interference in my mind, and I don't know how much more you guys want to delve into that, but I think it was terrible. I just want to go on to the Bombers for a second.
Sure.
It's a good thing we got that win on Friday, because if we wouldn't have, the way it ended up with the Saskatchewan-Edmonton game, we wouldn't be hosting a playoff game. So good on the boys for coming out, doing their thing. The defense played well, it's going to be a battle on Saturday afternoon. But I'm feeling good about it, guys. I'm feeling good. I think that we can do it, and we'll see what happens going forward. Anyways, you guys have a good day. Take care.
Take care, man.
Thanks for the call, Ron. We appreciate it. On the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We'll get to more of your calls and your tweets and everything else. All opinions welcome on The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, 7:30. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns has a call of the Jets and the Stars live from Dallas as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit to Winnipeg Jets hockey. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jay, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
The puck that was slapped out of Helly's glove, is there
crazy?
Should have there been a call on that, or what's the deal with that one?
I don't get that at all, man.
Do we have Hellebuck's comments on that?
Oh, we got Helly's comments.
Hang on the line, Jay. Here's what Connor Hellebuck thought of the play.
It was definitely in my glove, and I picked it up, and I wasn't bobbling it. I had it in the pocket, and I picked it up from my pad up to eye level, and then the stick comes under and knocks it out. It might have been a shaft, but, I mean, the refs are supposed to be right there, and I need them to have my back on that one.
Totally knocked it out. What the hell?
I don't know what goaltender interference is anymore.
Guys, there again is a perfect example of how this league could so much help itself to review every freaking goal. Like, the solution is so ridiculously simple. Wake up, NHL. What the hell?
I feel the same way. I saw it plain as day on watching the game, and I didn't understand what was going on. I was just... Not that we deserve to win that game, but, you know, tides turn with certain things, and you never know what could have happened.
Yeah, that game could have been 8-0 Jets, 8-0 Montreal, and that play happens. And I was waiting for somebody to review it or something, and just I don't know what goaltender interference is anymore. I really don't. I just
no one does.
You clearly touched a glove. I mean, are you allowed, even if he doesn't have it and he catches it and it bounces up out of his glove and you whack him on the glove while he's trying to catch it? Isn't that goaltender interference?
Absolutely, it would be. He's
so if he had it,
safe, yeah.
How is that not?
Yeah, it's crazy,
I don't get. I don't know.
Paul couldn't have challenged that.
Yeah, he can. He can. It's different than the offs.
Maybe his glove was outside the crease.
Yeah,
when
but even
it was
then,
hit,
you can't. If the goalie, especially when the goalie has, like, you can't slash a glove to begin
with.
But when the goalie
has it, he's
not
outside the crease, man. I don't believe he's outside the crease. Yeah, and plus he's got it like that. Yeah, it's just monumental. And I know, like, you know, these things tend to work themselves out, right? You get some calls, you miss them. But the Jets are getting royally screwed here, right? What is this, 3 now blatant wrong call sort of thing? You want to add in the interference on Buff? There's 4. It's just, come on.
Yeah.
Conspiracy!
No, don't
yes,
start
I
that,
love it.
No,
yes,
don't.
Yes, no. I can confirm.
No. They hate Winnipeg! Yeah. This is crap!
I took a tweet from a guy last night that said the league literally, longtime listener of the show, literally doesn't want the Jets to win the cup because it's a small market. And I'm like, no. Look, this is my point of the
Screw
officiating.
You, Batman.
The officiating... From the game on Saturday, it was horrific both ways. It wasn't good. And it's the second game I've seen this year live at a Bell MTS Place where it wasn't good for both teams. It was just, you know, and people were saying the Myers – that's a cross-check. Yeah. That is a total cross-check.
There you got to put your Winnipeg Jets Kool-Aid down and just – Yeah,
but
that's
to my point of that cross check, Kulikov took two penalties earlier in the game, and they were penalties, legitimate calls. But then he gets cross checked, I believe, at the end of the second or beginning of the third, and that's a penalty. Like, that's the same cross check that Myers did. And that's my point about officiating overall. It's not against the Jets, it's just highly inconsistent around the league.
I wonder if is there a team in the NHL or a fan base of a team in the NHL that goes, hey, you know, the refs have been real good to us this year?
That's the thing. Like,
honestly.
I bring this up every time we talk about officiating in whatever sport. Doesn't this sound like every doggone sport on the planet?
Yeah. Exactly. I watch the Flyers a lot. I am 100% convinced and can confirm that the refs are biased against the Flyers. I wonder if it's even possible for a team's fan base to look at the way their team has played this year and be like, yeah, that's fair. We've been treated justly by the referees.
You know, you can go to therapy for this watching the Flyers all the time thing, right?
Mm.
Not strong enough, brother.
Mm-mm. Mm. I love the hatred and the everything fueling orange and black. It's
how are Sixers doing?
They're above 500 for the first time. And this is not even a joke. For the first time in over 6 years.
Trust the process.
Stop it.
Yep.
Trust the they got a good team.
It's absurd.
One of their guys are going to win Rookie of the Year, and then they're going to trade him for another number one pick overall. It's the Sixer way. Hey, everybody, calm down. It's poor officiating both ways. Conspiracy theories aside, listen, this is what we have for you. Road Sport Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey tonight, 7:30, Jets and Stars live from Dallas. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns have the call. Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day will set it up for you with the afternoon ride from 3 till 6 with Husser and Rick Ralph, the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Ovshevsky and friends, and then the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up for you, and more of your chance to call in on the Boston Pizza fan line at 780-1290. I once said to somebody, the things I do for money, I'll never understand. They said, what'd you do? And I'm like, nothing. It's a great song. And my segue to that is we have a pair of tickets to the Northern Pikes at the Burton Cummings Theater, November 23rd. You ever do something for money you didn't understand, Westwood?
I'll take the fifth.
We'll need another hour.
This could go eight.
We got to go live to 11 for this. You
Big
were
show
Wiki?
After dark.
You were Wiki?
Have I?
It hasn't
even been 2 days since I could say I haven't.
Two tickets to the Northern Pikes, Burton Cummings Theater, November 23rd. The things you'll do for free tickets you'll never understand, but all you have to do is call 780-1290. The 12th caller through gets those. Jets and Stars tonight on TSN 1290-730. We'll be back tomorrow morning to recap it for you. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Tothy, thank you for listening. And the Big Show is back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.